Don't get left in the dark. Let us shine a light on everything you need to know. This is Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Matt Marchese. And alongside me tonight is my co-host, Andy McNamara. You can follow us on Twitter at MattSN590 and at AndyMC81. Our producer tonight of this fine program is Mark Don't Hassle the Boff, Boffo. And our technical operator is Tom Young. Coming up on tonight's program, 7:25, Hall of Famer Bill Polian, and also host of Inside Football Podcast, will join us at 7:25. Vivek Jacob, Raptors writer for Complex Canada, will stop by at 8 o'clock. You'll hear Fred Van Vliet from Tim and Sid earlier today. We're going to have a little Hot Take Tuesday coming up later in the show as well. Sal Capaccio, WGR 550's Buffalo Bills reporter. Joe Morgan, contributor to the Sporting News, covering the Clippers and Lakers. And also, the big one of the night, you get a chance to win Andy's pizza. And as I mentioned, my co-host Andy McNamara joins me right now. Andy, how are you tonight, buddy?
Doing good, brother. How are you?
Oh, it's been a while since we've worked together.
I know.
It feels like years, but I guess that's 2020. Everything you do and the time in between feels like years.
Yeah, it could have been like 3 weeks ago, and it's like, or was it 4 years ago? It doesn't, the time all blends together. Yes, I'm pumped to be doing the show with you today. We got some fantasy football talk too later as well, right? Waiver wire, like week 12, like this is go time for people's fantasy football teams.
Yes, it is, and I actually did a radio hit in Calgary on that earlier today and discussed some interesting names and just, you know, the NFL just in general has been so hard to figure out. Forget the fantasy football aspect of everything with COVID, with injuries, with literally you name it, it's happened this year. And I can honestly say it's been one of the most unpredictable seasons that I think we've ever seen.
Well, it really has. And the thing is, we now have to treat, on top of the usual calf strain, shoulder, concussion protocol, COVID-19. Like, it's become of like, okay, you're looking at lineups and whatever, and now it's like, okay, well, for the Baltimore Ravens, for example, all right, two of the starting running backs are out on the COVID-19 reserve list. Adam Thielen, COVID list. Like, it just has become a part of the game and just something else you have to keep in mind when it comes to if you're betting, fantasy, your favorite team, whatever. It's just a part of it. So you're right, it's an unpredictable year because we see big stars having to sit and sometimes like whole offensive lines, like the Raiders, Matt, right? Yeah, the Raiders' whole offensive line almost missed a game. A big chunk of the defensive line almost missed a game. Like, it's, if you don't manage your COVID protocols properly, that could be the turning point at some point this season for an NFL team.
Yeah, it really, really can. And so we'll talk. We got plenty of football on the show tonight, so we'll chat more. But the poll question for tonight is it got a little bit of heat on Twitter as we saw some going back and forth with some tweeters. But it's going along. ESPN's Emily Kaplan wrote an article today, and it was the best and worst contracts for each NHL team. And she chose, unsurprisingly, for both, that the best contract was Morgan Riley's and the worst contract was John Tavares. So I put the poll question out there, and it was which Maple Leaf has the worst contract. And it was John Tavares, Mitch Marner, William Nylander, and other, which is a write-in. And the best part about this whole thing, Andy, is not the slack or flack that we got from fans, but the fact that anybody who voted other did not actually write in a name. So that gets a little bit frustrating because, you know, you try and do something interesting and people crapped all over it and whatever. But unsurprisingly, John Tavares is in the lead at 47.5%. Mitch Marner is second at 33.8%. William Nylander fourth at 12.5%. And I'm not even going to include the other because nobody wrote in a thing. And
who else would it even be?
I guess some people may be a little bit unhappy with the TJ Brody contract. Maybe they think that's too much. I think that's a little bit unfair. But the only reason why I put William Nylander in there is not because I believe it. And I made that very apparent any time that I'm on the air. I think William Nylander's deal is a steal. But there are some, for lack of a better term, maroons that are out there that think that his contract is bad. So scoring 30-plus goals at $6.9 million in today's climate apparently is bad. So I don't know. I put it in there because, let's face it, Andy, some Toronto Maple Leafs fans are nuts.
Well, yes, and that's why we love it, right? That's the short for fans. It's fanatics. It's crazy. The lack of championship and playoff runs, Matt, has made us all nuts, right? Everyone's squirrely here. It's quarantined. You haven't had a playoff run. You didn't even technically get into the playoffs. You lost in the playoff and in the play-in round, and now everyone's all crazy. I think with the William Nylander take, it's sort of like an old one that people remembered from like a couple years ago when it first happened, because that was the big question. But you're right, as time has gone on and he's produced, contract looks good, right? Like it's a good looking contract right now, which was the hope when it was first signed. Okay, he's a young player, he's going to grow, he's going to be a 30 goal scorer, and then the deal's going to look good, and that's what it's been developing into.
Yeah, and I said it when the contract was signed. I said, that's going to be a steal. You could see the economics of the NHL going up. Now, you could never predict that COVID was going to happen because that's a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But whenever fans start going back into the buildings, remember, the NHL has an American TV deal that's up. They're going to split that with the digital rights deal, which is going to be huge. There's going to be an influx of cash here. So William Nylander's deal is going to look even better. He's actually going to look like a dummy for signing it. So the Tavares one is by far and away for me the tougher one to swallow here, because they didn't really have an, listen, I love John Tavares as a player, and I have no problem with him on the roster. But if we're calling things the way they should be called, the reason why, or one of the reasons why, the Leafs can't shore up their defense is because their captain makes $11 million. Like, yeah. that's the yeah. way that this world works. Unfortunately, that's how the, in the words of Bruce Almighty, that's the way the cookie crumbles. And John Tavares does go out and he's going to score you 30-plus goals and he's going to provide you with veteran leadership and he's your captain and all that stuff is great. But they didn't really have a need at center when they signed him. That was a bonus. They had Austin Matthews, and people could say whatever they want about Nazem Kadri. And I was the first guy that thought he was going to leave after that incident with the Bruins. But he showed what he can be in Colorado, especially in the playoffs.
Sure.
So they didn't really have a need there. Now, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, but you know, you could look to the reason why they couldn't sign Alex Pietrangelo, and maybe he didn't want to come here, I don't know. But maybe the reason why they couldn't sign him is because they signed John Tavares a couple years ago.
And when you look at, and it's not all about numbers, we know, right? It's not all about, this isn't the early 90s pre-New Jersey Devil trap when players were getting 120 points in a season, right? It's been a different era, different evolution in the game. But you look at Tavares, and it's like, he's never had a 90-point season. Okay. Now, 30-plus goals, yeah. And it all comes into role, and it all comes into, all right, what else does he bring? That word intangible, right, Matt? And that's sort of that analytical world versus the old-school hockey world. What are those underlying numbers compared to that gut feeling with having him there with a young team? So, like, I'm fine paying out the money as long as you're not sacrificing any areas. And of course, that's going to happen. And like you said, it's the defense that suffered. Now, Kyle Dubas, I'll give him full credit. I've been critical of him like as much as anybody. I think for what he's done, for the situation the team's been in, to be able to add the pieces that he did, on paper, I don't know how you could have done much better with the funds you had available.
Yeah, and I'm the first guy that will say when Kyle Dubas has done a bad job, I have no issue with that. But I think that this market is just a little bit too hard on him. You know, he didn't have the Patrick Marleau deal signed. He didn't have the Nikita Zaitsev deal signed. Yeah, he said some things like, you know, about how Cody Ceci is better than he's played and the underlying numbers would tell a different story. Like, okay, that kind of pisses me off. I'm not going to lie.
Not a great look.
I think it's a tad bit insulting based on what we saw from him that he's just not good enough. But fine, he's not here anymore. But to say that the Leafs aren't tangibly better this season than they were last season, I think is such a flawed statement. I think that bringing in Wayne Simmonds kind of replaces a bit of the toughness that you had with Kyle Clifford, but gives you a little bit more on the offensive end. Mm-hmm. I think getting Joe Thornton at the league minimum is a great deal, and it gives a real boost to your second power play unit. TJ Brody is going to come in and give you solid minutes. And,
that's my favorite one right there.
Yeah, and they bring in Zach Bogosian for $1 million.
Yeah.
Like that, that gives you toughness on the back end. Whether he slots in as your fifth or sixth defenseman, I don't care. I'll take what they did. So I think that people are a little bit hard on Kyle Dubas for the things that he, you know, has done. But I think by and large, he's done way more good than he's done bad in this gig.
Well, Matt, think of it this way. How many, and pick your sport, how many general managers, front office guys dig in stubborn? Nope, this is my vision. I'm going to ride this out. And you end up getting fired because you're too stubborn to get out of your own way. At least people give Kyle Dubas credit for this. He recognized the team he built as is, or helped build, was not getting it done. Now, how many other guys, if you went however you build the team, nope, going to keep going this way. This is my team. This is my type of player. No, he went out and he knew they had to get tougher. He knew they had to get a little edgier. And on paper, again, we don't know till everybody suits up, but it looks like he has done this. So I'll give him full credit for knowing, look, the pure vision I had was not working. I have to adjust. And he did that. So now you got all these guys, great deals that you mentioned, right? Short term. So now what does that tell you? This has got to be a go year. This has got to be a year where you, at the very least, you got, if you don't win a playoff round, big changes have to happen. Because this on paper is your team. This is your team with your coach.
Yeah, and I will say I think that the adjustment that he made was a year too late. I think everybody kind of saw the proof in the pudding after they lost to the Bruins two years ago now. And I think that was part of what irked me, but you're right. There are some people that are stubborn that continue to do the same things over and over again, and it doesn't work. Well, that's the definition of insanity.
That's it.
And Kyle Dubas is not insane. He has figured it out. And I'll give him credit because he had a strong belief in building a team, you know, with skill, and this is how they were going to play. But at the end of the day, that's not what wins cups. The Tampa Bay Lightning won the Stanley Cup not only because they have great players, but they have a great foundation around those players, which includes skill, which also includes toughness. It includes a solid D core. And again, yes, Victor Hedman does. Defensemen don't grow on trees, but we've seen, you know, what happens when you start to add some toughness around these players, because it makes them feel a little bit more invincible. And that's important when you have the skill that the Leafs do, especially up front.
And now you add the veteran. Now you add the, quote, grit, toughness, salt, I think you use, salty, whatever, sandpaper. Now you add that. Okay. And you have your coach. So there's no excuse, because every new GM has that one bullet, right? It's not my coach. Well, now you got your coach, and it came in midseason, so you could use the excuse, okay, you didn't get a proper training camp, COVID, bubble, blah, blah, blah. If the world gets back to some sort of normalcy and you're able to have a proper training camp, or at least one where you're able to implement everything from the start, he has his coach with the same ideal. You have the coach and GM in lockstep. That is so key. You have veterans coming in who desperately want to win. These aren't guys riding out the last year, collecting a paycheck for one more year, and they're going to hang it up. These guys want a championship. That's why they're here. So you had all that together. What does that mean? What does that do? And we're going to find out. Because, Matt, it might have been a year too late. But right now, this is the best situation going into a season with a Maple Leafs roster that I felt in quite some time.
Yeah, and we can kind of harp on this point that, and I agree with you, this is the year that they have to do it or else there's going to be changes. You said it bang on. He doesn't have that bullet in the chamber to fire the coach. He's already done that. I think that if this team does not win a playoff round, there is going to, like, the scorched earth thing is coming back. And I don't think that it's just the players. I think that it's going to be upper management that's going to face the wrath of this because they're the ones who built this team and somebody's got to pay for, you know, lack of success. So I look at this Leaf team and I'm really happy with what they've done and we'll kind of see where things go from here. But I wanted to get into a little bit of football before we get the legendary Bill Polian on in the next segment. Awesome. And we saw the Monday Nighter last night, and it looked like it was going to be close right up until the end, and it turned out to be. But Tom Brady, once again, having one of those kind of blow-up second halves, or blow-up games, I guess you can look if you look at the overall picture. And it... I don't know why it feels different. Maybe it's because Bill Belichick is not there. Maybe it's because Bruce Arians has, you know, kind of thrown Tom Brady under the bus twice this season, which you would think with a guy of Tom Brady's stature that probably wouldn't happen, especially coming to a new team. But I wonder how that relationship is actually working over there because... For Bruce Arians to say that Tom Brady may be misreading coverages and that's why he's making these errant throws is pretty damning to me. I don't know if Bruce Arians is taking a little bit of pressure off Byron Leftwich, who's the offensive coordinator there, but I'm at a loss here with what's gone on in Tampa Bay in those, because when Tom Brady plays bad, it is not pretty.
It is a total fall off. Like, we're seeing almost like a boom or bust type of Tom Brady, something we've never seen before, Matt, right? Like, okay, this one, the end of the game, two interceptions. Oh, look terrible. But all right, then you go back just 1 week before. Pops 46 on the Panthers. Great. Week before that, you only get three against the Saints. And so it's really back and forth. And to me, something I point to is the timing. In New England, for 20 years, that dude knew he was going to throw the ball to place X and receiver Y was going to be there. And that was it. That was the Patriot way. That was what happened. You did it. Whether it was Edelman, Welker before that, whatever, the guy did it. And that was it. Now, you're still, because you had so many injuries to Evans, to Godwin, Antonio Brown coming in, Gronk getting re-ramped up out of retirement, the timing is just not there. He's a rhythm quarterback. He needs to drop back, pop, and get it out. If the guy's not there, that's why you're seeing mistakes. And I think that's a big part of it. But to see this sort of roller coaster with, by the way, the Chiefs up this upcoming Sunday, whew, you better get figured out real quick.
Yeah, and speaking of figured it out, it looks like the Rams have figured it out. So I saw something, I think it was CBS that tweeted it out, and they basically have the number one ranked defense like across the board since week four. They happened to play the Bills the week prior, and the Bills ran all over them. But the Rams have figured it out. They're first in the NFC West, and the offense looked absolutely great yesterday. Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp with 10-plus catches each.
Wow.
It looked like the Rams' offense of old that we have seen be so successful, minus the running game, which was relatively non-existent yesterday and kind of has been all season. But the Rams are first in the NFC West, and the one stat that absolutely blew my mind, that Sean McVay, when leading at halftime, has not lost a game in the NFL.
Wow.
That is nuts to me.
That's wild. That's wild. And to bring it back quick to Tom Brady, Matt, I wanted to point this out. This is from Next Gen Stats, okay? And people rag on Drew Brees all the time about not being able to throw it deeper connect. Now, Tom Brady tries. But listen to this. So according to Next Gen Stats, Tom Brady is 0-for-19 on deep passes, which are 20 or more yards in the air, in his last four games with a 0.0 passer rating. That's something that needs to be looked into and figured out as to why, because they are completely taking that part of his game away.
Yeah. When you hear 0.0, what does that make you think of? Off the top of your head.
Well, I was going to say about 98% of the Browns quarterbacks since 1999.
Well, I wasn't going to go there.
It comes to my mind.
I was going to go there, but I just every time I hear that, I hear the Sam Mitchell line. I got guys with stat line 0-0-0. That's one of my favorite lines. But, you know, it's funny that people like, okay, I get that Josh Allen is not Tom Brady. Listen, before you take out the flamethrowers and
get at him on Twitter. Come on.
I get it. He's not Tom Brady. But if Josh Allen had numbers like that, they would have buried him.
Dude. Absolutely. We'll be like, oh, look at him. Not accurate. Brr. People falling over themselves trying to dump on Josh Allen. By the way, as well, how about Tom Brady, second time this season, not shaking the hand of the opposing quarterback after a loss? Like,
yeah, what's
I get
with
your,
that?
I get your quote, fiery. Oh, Tom. You know what? You're coming up look like a spoiled old brat. You're a 40-something-year-old loser attitude. You're a suck. Like, you're supposed to be the best all time, and that's your example? I get you're mad? What did poor Jared Goff, he was standing on the field like, where's Tom? You know, Nick Foles, hey, what? People lose, and guess what? Losers have shook your hand for 20 years, bro. Like, have a little bit of class and get over yourself, because that's just that just makes his unlikability go through the roof to me.
Yeah, a lot of people, and you're right, a lot of people have lost to Tom Brady in the course of his career.
A lot.
And you know what? I think yesterday was the 20th anniversary of his debut, and I think his first pass hit his running back, like, in the helmet. Like, it was terrible. So we saw a little bit of terrible yesterday with Tom Brady. We're going to hit the break, but coming up after the break, the Hall of Famer, Bill Polian, and now host of the Inside Football podcast, will join us. We'll talk about Tom Brady, and have teams figured out Lamar Jackson? That's coming up after this. I'm Matt Marchese, that's Andy McNamara, and you're listening to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
To Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese. Alongside me, my co-host, Andy McNamara, and pleased to be joined on the line by the legendary Hall of Fame executive, now host of the Inside Football podcast, Super Bowl winner. He's done it all, ladies and gentlemen, and he joins us on the line now. Bill Polian is with us on Sportsnet Tonight. Mr. Polian, how are you tonight?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to be with you.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. So on your last podcast episode, you did a lot of talking about quarterbacks, and because of the importance of the position, there's certainly a spotlight on them. But it feels like the spotlight is shining no brighter than on Tom Brady right now, and maybe the low light. But Bruce Arians kind of throws him under the bus a little bit in a radio interview that he did in Tampa yesterday. What's your take on the situation? Like, you've had superstar quarterbacks who have had big personalities. Like, when you hear your coach say something like that, do you have a conversation with them, or do you kind of just let them handle things?
No, you let him handle it. You know, first of all, Bruce is a very experienced coach. He's been around a long time. He has his way of doing things. And Tom, I'm certain, is well aware of that. And so that's point one. But point two is that you don't really react to it. I mean, it's just everybody's annoyed after a loss. and Bruce is, very plain spoken. I was fortunate enough to work with him for a lot of years in Indianapolis, and that's just the way he is. And the players know that.
Bill, continuing with Tom Brady, and you said, people kind of surly after a loss and all that, of course. Well, this is the second time, Nick Foles the first in the loss to the Bears, and now this with Jared Goff, where he didn't shake hands or go up after the game. And I don't know how big of a deal in the scheme of things that really is. But the look is just not good. You have the greatest of all time looking like a sore loser twice now after losses. What, as from your vantage point, what do you make of that?
Nothing.
people just need to get over it. Tommy's sad, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Bill Polian is our guest, Hall of Fame executive. He's also host of the Inside Football podcast. And the Baltimore Ravens were this juggernaut team last year, and we of course saw what happened to them in the playoffs when they ran into a good Titans defense. Did Mike Vrabel and the Titans give the rest of the league the blueprint on how to beat Lamar Jackson? Because the way things are going right now, it looks like everybody's kind of just sitting back and saying, yeah, just beat us with your arm and we'll see, and we'll take it from there.
Well, it isn't that simple. Actually, the San Diego Chargers did it in the playoffs 2 years ago when they took the run game of the Ravens and spilled everything to the outside. There's a technique that you use to do it where the linebackers fill. They, because of an injury, they played with essentially 7 DBs on the field for a good portion of the time. And that helped them to a great degree. But they spilled everything. They gave Lamar no running lanes. And when he was in the pocket, they pushed everything toward him so as not to give him run lanes up the middle, which is where he does actually most of his damage. So they were the ones that showed the blueprint. Tennessee did the same thing in the playoffs last year. And from what I gather, although I haven't seen the film yet, Lamar only had one big run up the middle on Sunday, which actually set up either a field goal or a touchdown. I can't remember which. But the fact of the matter is there is a way to defense him. And most people now are clued in on it. It's not easy. It's counterintuitive for rush people, especially NASCAR-type rushers, you know, who want to get up the field and sack the quarterback. If you try to do that, you're going to lose to Lamar Jackson, guaranteed. You have to push the pocket, and you got to contain him and keep him inside the pocket. And if he gets out, you're going to have people attacking him and spilling him toward the sideline. And you better get a lot of people there, because once he's out of the pocket, he's the best athlete on the field, so he overmatches everybody. People are figuring out the way to handle him. But as I said, it's not easy to do. And Kyler Murray is a whole different problem altogether, because he's a really, really good thrower, and he can make any throw there is as long as he's outside the pocket. So you absolutely have to keep him inside the pocket, as the Buffalo Bills found out to their chagrin 2 weeks ago.
Well, and Bill, those are two of the great young quarterbacks, but how about this rookie class? And boy, how sad to see Joe Burrow go out, ACL, MCL, just awful the way he was playing. But the rookie class, Burrow, the way he started, Justin Herbert coming in, Tua off the bench, and you have these young quarterbacks where it's sort of like they're in and the coaches are adapting the game plans to their strength. Who's impressed you most coming in? Tua, smaller sample size, but between, let's say, a Justin Herbert or a Joe Burrow.
Well, Burrow's been good. Herbert's been off the wall. I mean, he's
unbelievable.
He's the 10th highest quarterback rating in the league right now. 102.8, 19 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 66.8 completion percentage, 7.8 yards per pass attempt. That's a huge number. And 2,333 yards passing and only 16 sacks. And he missed the first game and a half. So, you know, that tells you a lot about the talent that he has. And you know, he's got better talent around him on the offensive side of the ball than Joe Burrow had, particularly on the offensive line. But still in all, it's a remarkable performance.
Bill Polian, host of the Inside Football podcast and Pro Football Hall of Fame executive, joining us on the line. Since we're talking about rookie quarterbacks, and by the way, bringing up the Kyler Murray touchdown. I'm a diehard Bills fan, and I couldn't even watch the game because the power was out of my house. So I almost broke my steering wheel after that happened. Yes, it was wonderful. But you know, I wanted to talk about this and go a little bit off the beaten path here. But it's a conversation that I had on the air a couple weeks ago, and since you're a former executive, you know the game as well as anyone around. I've always found it really curious because, you know, we talk about Tua being from a big school and now LSU is a big school in terms of, you know, their football program, whereas, you know, maybe they struggled a bit in the past. But why is it that quarterbacks from, let's say, Alabama or Ohio State or, you know, any other big traditional football school, they struggle when they get to the NFL? Because my take was the guys that go to the lesser schools have to be so much better to showcase their talent because they don't have, you know, number one recruiting classes around them. Like Tua has, you know, maybe four guys that he played with that are first round wide receivers. Is there a method to my madness here, or am I just mad?
Neither. I think you got a theory there, but I'm not sure that it holds up in the long run. And I've been asked the question a lot. It's a good question. My feeling is this. First of all, in order to be a successful quarterback in the National Football League, you have to be in the top 1% of high school quarterbacks in America, maybe 0.01% physically. You have to have a great arm. You have to have a quick release. You have to be a good athlete. Great athlete. You have to be a great athlete. So many are called, but few are chosen. Now, the big schools do get to recruit nationwide. So Tua, for example, who was born and went to high school for time in Hawaii, you know, migrated to Alabama. That's only because Alabama has the resources to help him do that. Other quarterbacks, Ian Book at Notre Dame from California. Well, it's not uncommon for kids from California to go to Notre Dame, but you got to have the wherewithal to go out there and recruit them. So the small schools, even the intermediate schools like Wyoming, where Josh Allen went, don't have those kind of recruiting budgets. What they do is recruit within 500 miles of their campus, basically, so you can drive there. So the big schools have an advantage. But in the end, when it's all said and done, except for a very short period of break-in time, maybe the first year, where a Josh Allen, as an example, going from the group of five and a weak group of five league at that, the Mountain West, to the NFL, is going to have a rocky first year, especially if he has to play. Because that's a huge jump in competitive level. If you're coming from Ohio State or Alabama or Notre Dame, it's still a huge jump, but it's not as big as Josh Allen would have. But in the end, after that first year, talent will out. That's the bottom line. The talent is going to rise to the top. And whether it's Aaron Rodgers from a bad Cal team whomever you want, Justin Herbert from a very good Oregon team, just to pick two examples, if you have the talent, you're going to make it.
Bill, we've talked about two of the first-round quarterbacks from that 2018 class, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen. Between the first overall pick, Baker Mayfield, and you have Sam Darnold, who's with the Jets, both. And I think it goes a long way to show the continuity for a young quarterback. Josh Allen's been able to be the same program all the way through. And we've seen the benefits and his growth with that. Whereas Baker Mayfield's had four different offensive coordinators in 3 years. And Sam Darnold's been injured and different programs and all that. When you look at the two as they've stood now through their NFL career, who do you like, I guess, better for potential-wise going forward? Because I feel bad to a certain degree for both quarterbacks just because they've had so much adversity.
Well, I like Patrick Mahomes better than anybody.
No, in the 2018 class, yeah.
The 2018 class, you know, really wasn't stellar probably when it's all said and done. I don't know enough about Darnold at this point. I haven't seen enough tape to tell me that he's anything but a prospect. Mayfield has some drawbacks, some of which are disguised by the fact that they run the ball so well. But he's, you know, he's had a fair to middling career now. Changing systems doesn't help. But in the end, I think, as I said before, talent will out. He's got plenty of talent around him now, and his numbers are okay. I mean, they're not great, but he's got a great running game to rely upon. And the schedule is a little bit favorable. We'll see as we go down the stretch. I think we'll know much more about Baker Mayfield as we go down the stretch and if his team makes the playoffs than we do now. And Darnold, I don't know. I mean, that as a general manager, if I were, you know, people are talking about the Jets getting the number one pick. And if they did, they would probably be in the business of trading Sam Darnold. And if I were thinking about trading for him, it'd be really a conundrum because I don't think we know what he is right now. He hasn't had enough exposure.
All right, Bill, one more before we let you go. And you mentioned Patrick Mahomes. I could feel the smile on your face when you mentioned Patrick Mahomes. But the Chiefs are 9-1 on the season. They survive a second scare versus Las Vegas on Sunday night. It feels almost as if the Chiefs are kind of bored because they know they're going to get there at the end. They're that good. They're that talented. But is there some concern about the way that their defense has been playing lately? Because they were really good at the beginning of the season, and now it kind of just looks like we'll just get by right now.
Well, I can assure you, knowing Spags as well as I do, their defensive coordinator, that and Andy Reid, that's not the way they're being coached. Every team has a bit of a lull, number one. It's a long season. And number two, that matchup is really a tough one. I'm not sure there's a tougher matchup for them in the entire AFC than the Raiders. Raider offense versus Chiefs defense. Those two, that matchup is as hard as it gets because the Chiefs' strengths are in their front, and their weakness, if they have one, is in matching up man-to-man on the back end across the board. And as you saw, the Raiders have receiver after receiver that can beat you, and including the tight end who's you know as good as there is, and John Gruden has made Carr into a really fine quarterback, and the running back is as solid as it gets, and he's a blaster, which really really helps. And if you have a number one running back that is a blaster, that can convert short yardage and goal line, you are so far ahead of the game. It's like having two guys. So they won't face a tougher offensive matchup than they have with the Raiders.
Well, Mr. Polian, we're out of time here, and we're very thankful for yours. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Good luck with the podcast, and all the best going forward, and stay safe.
Thank you very much. You too.
Bill Polian, host of the Inside Football Podcast, and of course, Pro Football Hall of Fame executive, the one-time executive of my favorite team, the Buffalo Bills, and watching him in that Four Falls of Buffalo was just, honestly, Andy, like, I tear up when I watch that. I was a little young to remember any of that because, you know, I think I was four when they went to their last Super Bowl or hadn't even turned four yet. So I don't remember a whole heck of a lot of it, but hearing the stories from my dad and all that stuff and just the heartbreak that everyone went through and the teams that Bill Polian and built were just outstanding, and they just couldn't get over that hump. For those who haven't seen it, I highly recommend watching that documentary. It's really good.
I haven't seen that one. No, I was a little bit older, I guess,
probably in like the 10 to 13 range during those Buffalo years, and it was like those Super Bowl runs, and it was, man, those... It was. They just found different ways, right? It was, if you were a Bills fan, it was absolutely gut-wrenching there. It's interesting though, when we were chatting with Bill about the success of the young quarterbacks, Matt, it was like not that long ago, everyone used the Aaron Rodgers example, right? Well, you sit them for 3 years and they're great, but we're seeing the exception to those rules with all the talent of these young quarterbacks. Of course, Pat Mahomes drafted in that 2017 draft with DeShone Kizer, Mitch Trubisky taken ahead of both of those guys. Imagine if you could redraft that if you were the Bears. Oh, man. But they're coming in, right? And you know what? I think something that gets lost is the credit. And Pat Mahomes has given open credit here to Alex Smith, because Patrick Mahomes sat his first year. Alex Smith was a selfless tutor to him. And I don't know if we see the same type of success from Patrick Mahomes, if he has to be a day one starter as raw as he was, and you don't have Alex Smith. I think the stars really aligned, and then obviously you got a shot year two, and, well, we know what happened.
I think the narrative of having a guy sit behind a quarterback because of, you know, oh, what they need to sit to learn, and honestly, I find it really hard to believe. The reason why Aaron Rodgers sat was because Brett Favre was playing in front of him. The reason why Patrick Mahomes sat is because Alex Smith was coming off his best statistical season.
Yep.
Because that team was very good with Alex Smith as the quarterback. So did the Chiefs know that Patrick Mahomes is going to be this good? I'm sure they had a feeling he was going to be good. That's why they took him where they did.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody saw this. So I don't even know how much it changes, because I think I'll give Patrick Mahomes credit because he deserves it, and his talent level is off the charts good. But is Patrick Mahomes in a different situation if Buffalo had drafted him with the talent that Buffalo had surrounding him and didn't have an offensive mind like Andy Reid's? I don't know what the answer is to that. But I think, like you said, the stars aligned. He ends up in Kansas City. You know, he learns how to be a pro. But let's also remember that Patrick Mahomes' father was a professional baseball pitcher.
Yeah.
He grew up in pro sports locker rooms. He knows what it takes to be a pro. This is why part of the reason why he is as good as he is. There is something to be said about that. So I don't know if Patrick Mahomes, if Patrick Mahomes ends up with the Jets, do we think that the Jets are good? Do we think that Patrick Mahomes ends up being the quarterback that he is? I highly doubt that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that go into that, but listen, there are a handful of football players that you pay to watch. You pay to watch Patrick Mahomes, you pay to watch Russell Wilson, you probably pay to still watch Aaron Rodgers, and you pay to watch Kyler Murray. After that, it's not a long list.
No, and to go back to the Josh Allen point too with the Buffalo Bills, I am convinced if Josh Allen would have went to most other situations on a poor team, like the Jets, like the Browns at the time, several others, the Dolphins at the time, he would have been a complete flop. All the raw tools. But you look at the consistency of the system, especially in this COVID year, right, with Brian Daboll and McDermott, and you have that continuity. You've seen him grow step by step every year, going from the combine, going from the Senior Bowl, all the way up. Had to work on footwork. Okay, he did. Had to work on different touches on different lengths of pass. Okay, he did. And he keeps growing. That consistency and how they've built around him is the perfect situation. Then you take that raw ability and mold it into what Josh Allen is becoming. He's still not done. Like, that's the scary part, Matt. Like, he's not done yet. So the ceiling on Josh Allen, I think, is still yet to be discovered. And boy, if he can get better than he is now, watch out.
Yeah, I'll make this one point before we hit the break, because we are running a bit tight here. But what I will say is, Josh Allen, I've said it before, Josh Allen didn't have nearly as many snaps at quarterback as any of the guys that were drafted in the first round.
Right.
He played other sports. He didn't play football all the time. So he was already behind. Now he's starting to get those reps. He's putting in the work, and give him credit, because like you said, he's put in the work to be better.
His
throwing motion's different. They've built a good team around him. There's lots of factors here. But I agree. I still think that there's room to grow here. He's in his third year. People judge him like he's a 10-year vet, like he's Andy Dalton or something. It's crazy.
No. His upside, I would dare say, Matt, and then we'll break for sure. I would dare say the quarterback out of that 2018 draft class that has the highest ceiling is Josh Allen, just of how raw he came in and his size and his strength and his speed and his athleticism. I think the highest ceiling remains Josh Allen. Now, who knows if he ever reaches it, but.
I knew I liked Yandy. I knew I liked
there you
for
go,
some
baby.
Reason. There it is.
I still love Baker, though.
I know you do. One thing that we do love is hearing the rumor mill as it regards to the Toronto Blue Jays. They are interested in some pretty good names, and we'll tell you all about it coming up after this. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara, and you're listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, alongside me, Andy McNamara. I could let this song play the full 4 minutes. It's such
sweet.
A banger tune, Andy.
Yeah. That's pretty good. That's some good rejoin music there by Tom Young. Good job.
Yeah. Shout out our technical operator tonight, Tom Young, and our wonderful producer, Mark Boffel, for the show that these two are putting on the air tonight. We're just kind of here. We're just like we are. Till 11. We're the Marshawn Lynch of this. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
That's right.
But although sometimes the more I talk, the more likely it is I'm going to get fined.
Well, that is true.
Some night. Yeah. I got a mortgage to pay here and a job to keep, actually. So
both are important.
Yeah, exactly. We kind of teased this before the break, and the Blue Jays have been linked to what seems like every player under the sun this offseason. Yeah. And the latest has them interested in JT Realmuto, George Springer, Michael Brantley, DJ LeMahieu, Justin Turner. They made an offer to Kevin Gausman before he signed his qualifying offer. What this tells me is that the Jays are serious about winning. They think that they can attract free agents and not just nobodies. They want to go out there and make some sort of a splash. To me, this is Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins putting their stamp on the team. It could be this offseason that they really say, this is our organization and we want to win. And they're going to prove a lot of people wrong, I think.
Well, Matt, and this is the year to make a move. Like last year with the pitching staff, it was horrendous the previous season. We remember. And so last year I didn't mind we're going to get better, but we're going to take some chances on a couple of one-year guys here and there. Now we're past that, okay? Got back into the playoffs. Now it's time to take that next step. So we need more sure things. We need playmakers. We need not necessarily another ace like Hyunjin Ryu, but like proven guys to go in. I'm kind of done with the, all right, hey, let's cross our fingers, roll the dice. And I'm with you. I hope. Now, it's one thing to be involved in talks. Now we got to start landing them. And we've seen all over Major League Baseball just the snail's pace of stars signing.
Yeah, this seems to be the ongoing trend now in baseball. And it was like that when the league was flush with cash. And now that the league took a financial hit this season, it feels like it's moving even slower. Like moving like molasses doesn't even cut it right now. It's like you said, at a snail's pace. But I wonder, the longer that this carries on like this, the more likely that the Jays are to sign a player, because maybe players get a little squirrely and they say, you know what, I got to make my money somehow. And not that they're going to take bargain basement deals, because they won't, but maybe, just maybe, this might help the Jays, because, you know, teams start to get deeper looks at organizations and they start to see things, and maybe the Canadian thing doesn't even factor in this year, because let's face it, the Raptors aren't playing here this season. The Jays might not be either come next season.
Well, that's a great point when you bring that factor into it. And I wonder too, just overall, if we see more 1 year deals. We saw it with Gausman there, right? Maybe guys were like, look, all right, the COVID stuff, the market, do I want to lock into a 3-4 year deal at a much lower rate than when things were good? Or do I want to chance it and do, okay, 1 year less than I would get, but then hopefully the world gets back on track, finances go up, and I can really try to cash in the following year. I wonder if we see that not just from the Jays, but overall in baseball.
I think that likely, actually. I think we've seen it. The NBA is a little bit different because next season's free agent class is the mega free agent class where everybody and their grandmother is a free agent and everybody's going to want to sign them, and everybody has maneuvered their cap so that they have maximum ability to do so. I think in baseball is a little bit different in that the finances are going, if fans start to come back in, the finances are going to be drastically different. So taking a one-year kind of bet on yourself deal isn't such a bad thing. Maybe for the younger guys, maybe a guy like Michael Brantley, who's near the end of his career, albeit who has been very, very good even as he gets older, maybe a one-year deal is likely for him just because of his age. But
just anyway,
maybe a guy like DJ LeMahieu signs a one-year deal. Yeah, he signs a one-year deal that, you know, pays him maybe a little bit more this season than he would have got strung over, you know, multiple years. Like, he's 32, so it's not as if he's not young, but he's certainly not old. But those are the types of deals that we're talking about here. So I'm really curious to see where this goes. I'm really excited for the Jays' future. I actually have a prediction in our Hot Take Tuesday that's coming up in the next hour. But somebody spoke to the media today. Fred VanVleet is back. He's raring and ready to go for the season. He's ready to prove people wrong. And we're going to talk about it coming up at 8 o'clock with Vivek Jacob, Raptors writer for Complex Canada. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara. And you're listening to Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm your host, Matt Marchese. Alongside me, Andy McNamara. You can follow us on Twitter at MattSN590 and at AndyMC81. Fred VanVleet back with the Raptors, and I think we couldn't be happier for that, you know, considering that, you know, Serge Ibaka is gone and Marc Gasol is gone, and only a year ago Kawhi Leonard left, but Fred's staying, and some things are looking bright. And joining us to talk about that is Vivek Jacob, Raptors writer for Complex Canada. Vivek, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. And you know, I mentioned Fred VanVleet off the top, and he did his avail today. You'll also hear him earlier today from Tim and Sid. We'll replay that next block. But, you know, a lot of Raptors fans are, they're kind of bummed out because Serge Ibaka's gone and Marc Gasol's gone and all. They only brought in Aaron Baines and today Alex Len. But with all that being said, are fans losing sight of the fact that the Raptors were able to retain one of the prized free agents in this year's class?
Yeah, no question. I mean, arguably, he was the best free agent available when you consider the fact that Anthony Davis really wasn't going to go anywhere. So I think with Fred VanVleet, to be able to bring him back on a contract that very much works for both sides, 4 years, $85 million, that's right about where any fan would have hoped to see them. And so I think when you look at the future of this franchise, you have Fred VanVleet secured, you have Pascal Siakam secured, you gave head coach Nick Nurse a new contract a couple months ago, and the next person in line will be OG Anunoby. If you have those four in place, this franchise is going to be winning for a very long time. And now with those four in place, you're also going to be able to appeal to free agents. Let's not forget the fact that this wasn't a situation where Ibaka and Gasol just flat out didn't want to play for Toronto. It's just that the contracts didn't work out on both sides. The Raptors obviously want to keep everything to a one-year term after giving Fred the deal that they gave him to ensure that they can be players in the free agency class of 2021. And that's where things just didn't work out. If they were just looking to maintain the roster, then absolutely they would have offered 2-3 years, but they're just thinking big picture, and that's why the roster is going to look a little different next season.
Well, and Vivek, when we look at it too, the length of the term, assuming Fred can not just continue to play as well as he has, but continue to grow, there's your succession plan for Kyle Lowry right there, right? Like, that was sort of my biggest fear if Fred left. Okay, like, maybe next year, but at some point, like, Kyle's at the peak. There's going to be a decline at some point. And at least here, that length of term looks like, okay, now we can start to transition, and at least you have that little bit of a backup plan and keep things going, like you said, with the other contracts that will be coming up as well.
Absolutely. And frankly, I would throw Malachi Flynn into that mix as well in terms of the succession plan, because if you have him under the tutelage of both Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry for ideally the next few years, and the expectations that are going to be there for him, he'll be able to come along nicely. It's not like he's a rookie who's going to have too much put on his plate. Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry are going to be there this season, so he's going to be able to just come in off the bench, you know, and learn slowly. And I think that's going to be a huge boost for him going forward, because the challenge for rookies this season is unlike any other, right? They don't have a summer league to play in. They're heading to training camp in right now. It's just about a week. And then so I think this season is going to present tremendous challenges for rookies. I think we might see them hit the rookie wall way faster than we've seen them hit it before. And so I think to have Lowry and Fred VanVleet there together to guide him is going to be huge. And like you said, with Fred VanVleet himself having learned from Kyle Lowry over the years, you see parts of their game that are so similar in the way that they use their body. Obviously, Kyle Lowry is much more of a playmaker, and that's something that still needs to come along for Fred. But you can see all the pieces coming together for the future of the franchise.
Vivek Jacob is our guest here on Sportsnet tonight, Raptors writer for Complex Canada. And Vivek, we kind of spoke about losing Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, and while I think Ibaka is the bigger loss in one respect, but, you know, Gasol on the defensive end is a big loss, what do you kind of make of the signings of Baines, Len, and Bembry? They're certainly not bank breaker deals. They don't hurt you long term. Do you like the kind of low risk, high reward that these can potentially offer?
Absolutely. I think when the Raptors look at both Aaron Baines and Alex Lynn, Alex Lynn is someone who's struggled to come along. He's had opportunities in Phoenix, he's had opportunities in Atlanta, and it hasn't worked out. You look at the chances that the Raptors have taken on different players. Obviously, last year they had to take a chance on Stanley Johnson and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and they're going to try and explore what they can in terms of trying to hit a home run somewhere with these contracts. And so things didn't work out with Serge Ibaka. Things didn't work out with Marc Gasol. So plan B is taking that flyer. And I think with Aaron Baines, especially with the start that he had to last season, there's an opportunity there for him to really make an impact. And one of his biggest strengths, honestly, is screen setting. And you think about Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry at the guard spots. When he's setting those screens, it's going to open up a ton of room. When Pascal Siakam has the ball at the top of the key and Aaron Baines is coming up to set his screen, it's going to open up space again. And that's something that they're really going to relish. So I think Baines could be a really nice fit here in Toronto. And again, as you said, it maintains that flexibility for 2021.
Just to follow up on those three guys, more specifically Alex Lynn and DeAndre Bembry, both former first-round picks. They're not young, but they're certainly not old. They're not first or second-year players. But how much of the faith in the Raptors developing players should make fans kind of be okay with these and think that these actually could turn out to be better signings than the money that they had to shell out to get them? Because we've talked about Fred VanVleet. He's an undrafted free agent. We've seen the development of him. We've seen the development of Norm Powell. We've seen what they've done with Pascal Siakam. Like, these are guys that not a lot was expected of them, but they've turned out to be really good players. I'm wondering if the way the Raptors develop those types of players, if there is still some hope for Bembry and Len.
Absolutely. And I think when you look at DeAndre Bembry, he's someone that doesn't have a three-point shot. He's essentially coming in as the Rondae Hollis-Jefferson replacement. And I like that in terms of the fact that DeAndre Bembry has a lot more skills handling the ball and playmaking. And when you look at Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, offensively, they tried to get him to do that because he couldn't quite score the ball. He couldn't really finish around the rim. So if he could tee up others with sort of his chaos style, then that was going to bode well for the team. That didn't work out. So now they're going to try and get that out of DeAndre Bembry. And they know what he brings to the table in terms of his athleticism. He has some high-flying dunks and can really get after it defensively. And that's what they look for in these guys. Is there a floor? Is there a floor to your game where we know what we're working with and can accentuate other parts of your game? Same thing with Alex Lynn. He's a big body that, again, will bring that screen setting, will play that specific role that they need, and then they'll try to bring along the other stuff. But again, you go back to that Raptors-Celtics series, Serge Ibaka gave everything he could offensively, but he did have his struggles defensively. Marc Gasol was pretty much a no-show all series. If you can just create a better floor at that center position and have guys like Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, OG Anunoby, and Pascal Siakam continue to improve their game, they will still be extremely competitive in the East.
Vivek, I really like that idea there because it was the bigger names, the guys we've been accustomed to, right? Ibaka and Gasol. But yeah, maybe these lesser known to the Toronto market guys could come in, elevate that play a bit, and actually end up making you better. I think that's a very interesting take. And to go back quick to their first round pick, Malachi Flynn, and we talked about the long term development and growth with Fred and Kyle and transitions and all that. What should Raptors fans expect out of him? Like, what do you think his role is going to be this year? Because everyone wants to see at some point the new toy, right?
Yep. I think with Malachi Flynn, you're going to get a guard who is really, I think, pro-ready in the pick and roll. I think he makes really good decisions, and he can pull up in the mid-range. He can hit that floater, and that's something the Raptors sort of lack and really lacked in the Boston series when Boston basically set out and said, hey, we're going to protect the rim. We're going to protect the three-point line. And if we take those two away, we're happy with you taking the mid-range shots because you haven't proven that you can take those. And so with Pascal Siakam struggling in that series, Fred VanVleet, that's one thing that he needs to add to his game as well, the mid-range. And if he can do that, Malachi Flynn, him already bringing that to the table, I think that's going to be his biggest strength in terms of how he can make the Raptors a bit different. And if there were two weaknesses that you look at overall for the Raptors in that Celtics series, it was a bit of that athleticism. And the other part would be the individual scoring punch, right? Because Siakam was struggling, you had Lowry giving everything that he had, but you couldn't really get it from anyone else consistently. You know, finally you had a Norman Powell show up in a game six. You had Serge Ibaka show up in spurts. But you never really got it out of anyone consistently. If he can come in off the bench and just provide that punch consistently, I think that's going to be the biggest addition for the Raptors.
Vivek Jacob is our guest on Sportsnet tonight here. And I kind of want to go back to this Fred VanVleet signing just for a second here. How much do you think that a guy like Fred VanVleet would know about Masai Ujiri's future when he just committed to a four-year deal? Am I crazy in thinking that, or is maybe there some talk that maybe Fred said, you know what, I'll stay if you stay?
You know, I think that's an interesting point, but at the end of the day, I think Fred VanVleet, for him, the most important factors would be, is the money right and is the situation right? We know that he's all about winning and he is all about securing the bag. And so I think the money was right where it needed to be. So when he looks at all the other factors of, is this a winning, stable organization? And, you know, in a worst case scenario, the Raptors do sort of have contingency plans within the front office if Masai Ujiri were to pursue something else. But again, my personal take on it, I think he is just waiting on this Giannis Antetokounmpo decision with the Supermax. If Giannis doesn't sign it, now he's got way more leverage when he goes into that negotiation. And he's able to probably get himself an even bigger deal than he's in line for already.
Yeah, and that's really for Raptors fans and the whole league, something we've been waiting for, it feels like forever, is that Supermax deal going to be signed? We've seen what the Bucks have tried to do to showcase to him that, hey, you know what? You said you wanted us to get better. That interview on Sweden radio, whatever it was, want the team to get better. And they've done that, or at least tried and showed. Like, does it look more likely than not that Giannis is going to go back? Because that's sort of the vibe I'm getting here, Vivek. Like, we've all been waiting for him to become available, and in the end, it just might not happen.
That seems to be the way things are playing out. It does seem like Giannis is going to sign that Supermax, from what executives are saying, what league sources are saying. But all that is based on the Bucks being extremely confident. But it wouldn't be the first time that the Bucks have misread the situation either. They thought they acquired Bogdanovich in the sign and trade. And guess what happened to that? So I wouldn't be surprised if Giannis didn't sign the Supermax. I think the fact that he hasn't even done it till now is a bit of a concern. And, you know, some people will look at Bam Adebayo signing his deal with the Miami Heat as some sort of sign that they don't think Giannis is going to be available, but I think that's them just taking care of their own. And the biggest point I'll make about the Giannis potential play in 2021 is this: whether he's available or not, whether things work out in free agency then or not, the Raptors front office has proven that, yeah, they can have a plan A, but they'll have a plan B ready as well. We saw that right here with Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. We saw that when things went south with DeMar DeRozan and they traded for Kawhi Leonard and got a championship. Time and again, they have proven that they will have a plan in place. But if that plan doesn't work out, they will have plan B ready to go.
So, Vivek, now that the dust has sort of settled here on free agency, do you think that this is the Raptors roster when day one of training camp hits, maybe save for a few two-way guys that they might bring in or guys that they may pick up on waivers or what have you? Do you think this is kind of what we're going to see when the season starts?
This is pretty much what we're going to see. I'm still waiting on the decision on O'Shea Brissett. He's a restricted free agent. Obviously, the Raptors made their qualifying offer to him, and he's a local boy, so it'd be nice to see him back. So that's one thing that's pending, and obviously we have to see what happens with Terrence Davis. They've got to make a decision by November 29th if they're going to guarantee his contract or not. We'll have to see how that plays out. So those are the two things I'd be waiting on. But outside of that, I think the roster is what it is, and let's face it, there's not too much time to change things. December 1 is training camp, so I think this is what we're going to see going down the line.
So with that being said, in the East right now, where do you kind of have them slotted in?
To me, the top three teams in the East in no particular order would be Miami, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. I think the Sixers have significantly upgraded their fits. I know people might say the talent might be a downgrade when you give up an Al Horford, but I think getting shooters and Danny Green and Seth Curry fits the team much better, and I expect them to be what people expected last season when everyone was saying that they were going to be serious contenders. I think they've upgraded significantly, and outside of the top three, I think the Raptors are going to be right there competing with the Celtics, with the Nets, with the Pacers, because let's face it, the Nets, I think they have a lot of question marks. The injury that Kevin Durant suffered with the Achilles, that's something that's usually spelled doom for NBA players. Kyrie Irving is a major question mark, whether it's his injury history, whether it's his leadership. And then you look at Steve Nash as a first-time head coach. We don't know what to get with him. And Boston, they've lost Gordon Hayward. So they aren't as good as they were last year either. So I think they're right there. Outside of the top three.
Vivek, good stuff as always, and thanks for taking some time for us, and I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Vivek Jacob, Raptors writer for Complex Canada. And Andy, I think Raptors fans kind of crying poor that they weren't able to bring in another player, or, you know, because they lost Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol. I think it's time to realize that they were able to keep maybe the most prized free agent, like Vivek said, outside of Anthony Davis, maybe the most prized free agent. and he didn't go anywhere. He had the chance to leave and decided to stay here. That, to me, is a win.
That also shows, again, to the rest of the NBA world, people want to stay in Toronto. I think winning the championship, we're sort of past that, per se, like the old days. But it's good to have that example set. And also, let's face it. Look, we love Serge. We love Gasol. But for Marc Gasol, like, how much did he really have left in the tank, right? On a full season, a lot of miles on those legs. Serge, bit of a different story. But I like what Vivek said, that maybe, low-key, the Raptors might have got better at center. Like, better with their big man play. Well, we're going to have to see how they all fit in, right? But if you're able to get guys like Baines, like Len, who can go in, maybe give you some more consistency, maybe the ceiling on production or performance isn't as high as Ibaka or Gasol could get. But I think, Matt, if you get more consistent play, especially as the playoffs go, maybe the Raptors are actually better. And we just won't know that, and it won't be as exciting as if they got a bigger name.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And yeah, I would have loved for them to bring in a Tristan Thompson or a Montrezl Harrell.
Sure.
But that was clearly not in the cards, and that's fine. The Raptors will find a way. You know, let's not forget that they have, you know, the reigning coach of the year. They're, you know, just now a year removed from winning an NBA championship. Yes, they don't have Kawhi Leonard. Yes, they lost Ibaka and Gasol, but they still have their core pieces in place. I expect that Pascal Siakam is going to improve. I expect that Norm Powell is going to improve. The same for Fred VanVleet. And you know what you're getting out of Kyle Lowry. And I think OG Anunoby takes another step forward. So is this team really, you know, there? I'm sure there are some people in the U.S. that'll have the Raptors not even making the playoffs again, like they did after they won the championship.
Stupid. Yeah.
It's dumb. It's dumb.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Don't listen to those people. Look and see what you have. Yes, the East is a little bit tougher, but it's certainly not a place that is, it's not the dominant Western Conference that we've seen in years, but it's also that the Raptors are a very good team, and you have to have faith in Masai Ujiri, like Vivek said, that he's got a plan. He always has a plan.
Yeah.
Masai Ujiri, how many moves has Masai Ujiri made that haven't turned out? I wouldn't say none, but there hasn't been too many.
There's been no, you can't say there's been a disaster. And look at the deals too. Okay, these are for the center free agent signings for Len and Baines. 2-year deal for Baines, 1-year deal for Len. You're not locked into these guys at super big money for long term. Where, let's say, like Tristan Thompson, would you love the Canadian to come home? Yes, it'd be a great story. But he was far from perfect in Cleveland the last couple of years, right? You could argue he's been on the decline. Does a change of scenery change it? Who knows? But you're not locked in. You have pieces. If one of them works out, you got a gem. If not, you're not tied in, and you can still pivot to a different direction there. That's why I think the brilliance of those moves. Okay, you couldn't get maybe a big name like you wanted, if they even wanted those guys. You're able to do that and still keep money free, which I think is just, again, masterful front office, just work by everybody with the Toronto Raptors. It's just, there's no reason, Matt, why you should doubt anything that Masai or Bobby Webster do. There's just no, like, whatever they do, I'm just like, yep, it's going to work. Why would I doubt you?
Yeah.
Right?
The NBA championship should buy them years and years of leash. Not miles, years of leash. You should be able to go around the world way more times than you can count with the leash that they have for winning a championship in this city. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and it's now, like you said, the East is very good. Vivek laid it out, yeah. But do I look at the East, and I think if we go back to those LeBron Cavs days, and you're like, well, it's just how far you get till you face LeBron. No, there isn't that. There isn't that. Or with the Warriors when everybody was healthy. It's not like if you're in the West. Okay, what seed can we get to avoid the Warriors to the conference championships where we will definitely lose? There's not that situation. There's really good teams. There's teams that have got better. But there's also a weakness and spots where you can point to and say, okay, you know what? They're good, but we can hang. The Raptors, I feel, can hang with anybody.
Oh, yeah, absolutely they can. And they lost to the Celtics in Game 7. They could very well have been in the NBA final, seeing how that series went between the Celtics and the Heat. There's no question about it. So it's not as if they are so far behind all these other teams. They're maybe a player away from being as good as those teams. But as a team, the actual team aspect, I would put the Raptors up with anybody as a group, as a cohesive unit in comparison to some of the teams. Like, do we know what Brooklyn's going to be? Like, Kyrie Irving is a ticking time bomb. Do we know what he's going to be? Yeah. I have an idea of what he's going to be, a very talented guy who doesn't want to give up the stardom to anybody else. He wanted to leave Cleveland because he didn't want to be in LeBron James' shadow and thought he could do it on his own. Well, guess what? He can't. So do we think that's going to change? Yeah, I can't see any of that changing. But we got to hit a break. Coming up, you're going to hear from the now one of the newest rich men in Toronto. Fred VanVleet was on Tim and Sid earlier today, and we'll take a listen to that interview. This is Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Matt Marchese, and that's Andy McNamara. We'll be back soon.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Fred VanVleet re-signs with the Raptors. Big four-year deal staying with the club, showing his commitment to the city. And earlier today, he jumped on with Tim and Sid, and here's their conversation.
It's one thing to bet on yourself. It's another to put in the work and be able to take those chips to the window and cash out. Fred VanVleet has done that a couple of times now, and we welcome him to the show. Freddie, thanks for doing this, and congrats on the new deal.
Man, thank you. Thanks for having me.
When did you know that you were going to return to the Raptors?
That was kind of our plan the whole time, but, just when the deal got done was, Saturday morning. So that was a big, big relief for me to have that kind of behind us for sure.
Now, we noticed in the deal, player option for year four, so you're still betting on yourself to be able to level up. How do you want to improve over the span of this deal, the way you've improved in your career so far?
Just keep making jumps. I think keep continuing to be more efficient, and then tighten up a lot of the things that I'm already good at. I think with a bigger role and a bigger opportunity, I'm going to have more chances to make more plays and do more things and become a better, even more better of a leader. So everything that I've done thus far, I can get better at, and there's areas that I need to improve that I will improve in. So I'm excited about the next few years and what that'll look like as an individual. But ultimately, the goal is to keep working towards that next championship.
You do realize that you've become almost the example to bet on yourself, to never give up, to keep working. Like, other guys who are now passed over use your name as inspiration that it can be done. Do you know that? Like,
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool to be on this side of it. But, I was just on the other side of it not too long ago. So I don't forget. My memory is not that bad. I remember a lot of situations that I've been in, a lot of people saying certain things. And, you just keep that with you and you try to be gracious and humble along your way. But in the back of your mind, you always keep things in perspective. But I do think that it's important that a lot of guys who are in a similar position I was in can use my story, but just understand, if you really want to use my story, do your research and really dive into what that took, because it's not just as simple as saying, oh, everybody's overlooking me and they don't think I'm good enough, and then you sign for a big contract. It's not that simple.
All right, let's examine that, because I love it. In this day and age, sometimes things become this tight little story that people can easily consume and move on. To me, it does a disservice to what was actually accomplished. Like, what do people miss about your journey to this point that you want them to know? Like, it's easy to say, hey, get on your grind or rise and grind. It's another thing to actually do it.
Yeah, it's just you got to be the only person in the world who believes in yourself more, than anybody else. Like, I have an incredibly, important support system behind me that allowed me to feel these type of things and allowed me to be on this journey. But at the same time, they couldn't do it for me. So what I see with a lot of guys is there's people around them that believe in them more than they believe in themselves. And that can never be the case. And for me, I've always been kind of classified as like this crazy, ambitious, arrogant guy who felt like, you know, he was always better than what he is. But, you know, who's to say I'm not? And I'm not going to ever let anybody else put a value on me. I'm the only person that can determine my value. And, you know, that's what's led me to this point. So there's no way to sum up the story. You just have to kind of look through the story and look through the highs and the lows and understand that you have to be okay with accepting your role, because I did. When I first came into the league, I had to accept the situation I was in. But it never dimmed my flame to the point to where I just fell completely into that, because if that was the case, I would still be a end of the bench guy.
Let's talk about that support system, because when you originally signed at the beginning of your journey, the money as an undrafted free agent isn't in the paper. Now you sign, the money's in the paper, it's on Twitter. How many people are starting to hit you up with numbers that you don't recognize, trying to be a part of that support system now that you've really leveled up?
Not too many. We keep a tight ship over here, so I kind of cut off the fat really early in my life. And that, no, that $500,000 I was making my first year, that was in the paper at Rockford, I guarantee you that. On Instagram, and it didn't get clicks, but people been knowing what I've been making for the last 4 years, so I'm used to it. But we just been running this tight ship. I mean, people see it now because I've made it to what the public views as the top of the mountain. But like the stuff that I'm saying now and the stuff that I'm doing, I've been on this for 10, 15 years now, and then just now it makes sense. Before you get to that point, it just sounds crazy. And, you know, people look at you like you don't know what you're talking about, or you know, you believe in yourself too much. But now it makes sense. And now everybody can look back and say, oh, OK, he didn't know what he was talking about, or he didn't know what he was doing. Or, man, how did we miss that? You missed it because you wanted to miss it. You know what I mean? That's just how it goes.
I love that we're hearing part of the support system right now. Is that the same?
They got big boots on and beads flying around their heads, crying, jumping around. So they're never too far away.
Hey, don't worry about it. I just dropped my son off back at school. So let's talk about this, because I when you bring up the support system, obviously family, friends, people who work with you, people who have worked with you along the way, and teammates. And Kyle Lowry had a pretty cool Instagram post when the reports of your signing came out. And he talked about the blood, sweat, and even the broken teeth among that post. And then talked a little bit about the man that you have become. What is Kyle's support meant to you, especially when you're drafted? He could be looked at as the guy who had the spot you wanted.
Yeah. I mean, that's my brother, man. It's hard to put into words. I think that, what he's speaking to is more so the relationship, and I try to tell people this all the time. Like, when I came into camp, Kyle didn't know me from a can of paint, and, you know, he showed me the respect. But I also demanded my respect as well. So when we had our interactions, I think he saw just how I was on it as far as my character and my play and the way that I was, you know, moving. And I saw that he was open to me a little bit, and I just knew I had to take that and run with it. So, you know, I tell people all the time, my first day at camp, I thought I was trying to get to the gym, you know, early. Kyle had already been in there for an hour and a half. And then, you know, he comes up to me and says, yo, here, Rook, carry this bag for me. And, like, I'm like, all right, shit, I'm in the NBA. I carry all your bags if you want me to. Like, I don't, you know, but now that I'm in this position, I see guys that don't do that. There's rookies that come in that don't want to do their rookie duties. And it causes a rift, you know, between the players. And so I say all that to say, if I was coming at him like, this is the top guy, I got to cut his legs off from underneath him, I wouldn't probably be in this position I am right now. And if he was a jerk to me from day one, you know what I mean, our relationship would have never been what it is to this point. So we would have never been in a position to help each other.
You know, we just got through the draft process, and I found it really interesting that people were saying Peyton Pritchard, a guard like Kyle Lowry, Malachi Flynn, a guard like Fred VanVleet. when you were a guard in the draft, people were looking for a guard like Fred VanVleet. Is there something we can learn that you guys have the intangibles, the competitiveness, and that's not just about the measurables that evaluators should be looking for?
Nah, you can't teach it, man. And I've struggled with that in the last 2 months myself, watching this draft unfold. It's like I've been getting that, the Peyton Pritchards and the Malik, and I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I see the game, yeah, okay, but like what I have, I don't even know what it is. You know what I mean? So I can't look for it in somebody else. It's like it's between your ears. It's all mental for me, at least, just speaking for me. But, you know, only thing you can do as a guy like me is just appreciate that that's even the possibility. And I spoke on it a little bit earlier. Like, I don't think some of these kids would have been getting drafted if my story doesn't go this way, because they would be looked at in a different light. Guys like me were obviously weren't appreciated when I was coming out. So here we are 4 years later, and these guys are getting drafted, and I'm a player comparison on draft night, which is like the funniest thing in the world to me, because, you know, I went undrafted. So you just appreciate the journey and kind of, you know, how things have changed so quickly and the way that the NBA changes. We all know it's a copycat league. So I think there's a lot of teams looking for the next Fred VanVleet or the next Kyle Lowry and saying, how do we not miss on guys like that again?
Yeah, without a doubt. It's a great point. Speaking of the business, how tough is it to say goodbye to Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol?
It's tough, man. It's tough. Those, you know, those are two of the better bigs in the league and have been for a long time. Unbelievably great people and friends and brothers to us, and just having that veteran presence in the locker room and on the plane, and just, you know, having that advice and people to lean on when you need it. Keeping things fresh, keeping things in perspective. Obviously, we won a championship together, so that bond is lifelong. So it's tough to see him go. You know, you understand the nature of the business and how those things go. So we wish him the best, and I just can't wait to put both of those guys in 100 pick and rolls and double team them and you know, be annoying and foul them. So we'll miss him. I'll miss him more as people than I will as players, but, man, we'll probably miss him on the court for sure.
Let me follow up on that a second, because we played a best of Serge off the court yesterday, and we were laughing our asses off at the how hungry are you and eating a beef whatever pizza with Kawhi Leonard and the Slam Magazine shoot.
Freddie Vandalay.
Yeah, Freddie Vandalay. What's your favorite off the court Serge moment?
That's all day, every day, man. That's all day, every day with Serge. You guys got to see it. He turned into a media darling there at the end. I think he started to, you know, embellish in it. And once he had his cooking show and the clothing show, like, he started to realize that people like that kind of stuff. But that's how he is every day. He's just a character. But, you know, I won't miss waiting on the team playing for an hour for him to show up. I won't that. I wait an hour after the game for him to do his facials and exfoliating and all that. But I'll miss my guy a lot, man, for sure.
Now, you're saying he's a media darling. Like, don't act like you're not a mogul at this point. We see the step and repeat behind you with the chip, with the bag in the middle for the – oh, we see the polo with the logo looking like it's Balenciaga, but it's FBV shop. what's next in terms of everything that is the business of Bet on Yourself and Fred VanVleet?
You know, we're just taking things to the next level, and it's like it's a slow, steady climb, but, I mean – you know, if you see the basketball progression, that's the same thing I'm doing in my business life, is just trying to take things one step at a time and trying to think about what's next and how do I push forward. And I remember I had this brand my rookie year, and I walked in with shirts, and they're like, "What is that?" And I was like, "This is me. This is my logo." And they're like, "What the hell you got a logo for?" You know, at the end of the bench, you're going back and forth to the D League, but I knew in my mind that that's not where I was going to be at always. So, again, we're just building foundations here and trying to build, like, the blueprint and kind of, you know, the system and the structure, so that when things do take off, here we are now, I already have something in place that can give people that I love jobs and opportunities and things like that. And also, I'm really into this stuff, so it's super cool to see. But the business is definitely booming right now, and I'm looking forward to, you know, what's next.
Now, I know you, and I know now that you have the money, you're not going to forget about the movement. And you were really outspoken in the bubble about the Black Lives Matter movement. And so as we move forward to a new season, what can you, what can the organization who's been out front, what can the league and the players do to kind of keep that conversation going?
Continue to raise awareness. I think I kind of shifted my focus once we decided to resume play. And once I learned some details about the league that, you know, I won't speak on publicly, I kind of shifted my focus away from the pretty, you know, the words on the court and the words on the jersey, all the symbolic gestures. Like, let's get to the real work and let's see what we can really do. So, I'm doing work in my hometown like I always do. I'm going to continue to try to find work to do, you know, in Toronto. And maybe, you know, we'll find some stuff to do in Tampa. So just put your boots on the ground and get to work and make real change. I'm working on a couple scholarship programs. So things like that, that's long-term effects. I'm not a politician. I'm not a social activist. And I think that, for me, I'm not going to act like one because it gets clicks on the internet. So I just want to shift my focus a little bit away from like the broadcasting and the mainstream effect of saying those things on TV, because it just becomes null and void. And the people behind the scenes that are making real changes are laughing at us anyway. So let's see how we can get real change. And Chow was just on the phone. Larry called me yesterday, Mr. Tannenbaum. And those are the interactions that I want to have. Can I speak to him like I speak to my brother or my dad or my mom, you know, and ask him for things and he respond? All right, that's changed. Like, get him on the phone and let's make some real things happen.
It's funny, as soon as you said boots to the ground and do some real work, I thought that's what got you where you are in life, period. It's a great way to put it. And also, if we can all, I remember we had you in studio in 2018, and you talked, we were talking about bet on yourself, and you said this has been a journey the entire way. There've been bets on yourself at 5, and there'll be bets on yourself at 25 and at 35. And if we can help any way along that road, let us know, because we always enjoy these conversations.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for sure. And it takes all of us, man. It takes all of us. And obviously in my career, I'm the one doing the work, but it's much more than just me. There's a bunch of people behind me that's rolling with me along the way, and you know, everybody has to do their part. So I'm just excited in terms of professionally that this is where we are in my personal life. But as far as, you know, the activism thing goes, like, everybody has to do their part, and we'll build it out from there.
We've always enjoyed the conversations because they're real. Whatever the topic has been, and this has been no different. Thank you for the time, and come back on this show whenever you want.
All right, brother. Thank you, guys.
That was Fred VanVleet earlier today on Tim and Sid with Tim McAuliffe and Donovan Bennett filling in for Sid Sixero. We got to take a break, but coming up next, little Hot Take Tuesday. You're going to hear about it and more. This is Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara. We'll chat in a couple minutes.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, alongside me, Andy McNamara. And for this segment and for another one coming up later on, but specifically for this one, we're going to bring in our producer, Mark. Don't hassle the Boffo, as we do our Hot Take Tuesday.
Ooh.
And yeah, it's going to get a little spicy in here. I actually got the heating blanket on right now to get things going and get the blood flowing a little bit. So, this is something that we don't do, and I'm not particularly inclined to do hot takes. So I said, hey, what the heck? Why not? We're here. It's Tuesday. Let's do it. So, Andy, I'm going to go to – actually, let's bring in Mark Boffo into the conversation. Mr. Boffo, how are you tonight?
I'm doing tremendous, guys. Nice little start to the show tonight.
Excellent job in booking, as always. One of my favorite people at The Fan. For those that don't know, we actually used to work on the same show together, and Boffo carried me a lot, so kudos to you, sir. All right, Andy, we're going to start with you with your hot take, and I think I have an idea where this one is going.
All right, gentlemen. The hot take, which I personally have felt with a conviction since draft day 2018 that it was going to be true, but everyone fawned over him last year. Oh, he's going to change the game, and he has begun to be exposed. And my hot take is that within 2 years, probably one, Lamar Jackson will be the worst quarterback in the AFC North. How do you like that? And I'll tell you why, gentlemen. I'll tell you why. Because so often, you see something new in the NFL, okay? Something new, something flashy. Ooh, the jingling keys. Everybody likes it. But defensive coordinators are real smart. And you have to be multidimensional. You have to be able to adjust. Lamar Jackson's not doing that. Guy was running a lot. Oh, and he threw a ton of touchdowns last year. Okay, what's happening this year? The touchdowns are down. The completion percentages are down. The adjusted QB ratings are down. Everything's down. He's running less. From a fantasy side, less than 19 fantasy points 6 times this year for a guy people wanted to take for first overall, some people I heard, guys. Okay? Lamar Jackson is one-trick pony, and he can't adjust. He can't throw to the outside. The book was out with the Chargers. Then he overcame. Okay, teams didn't figure it out. The book was out with the Titans. They did it last year. The Patriots did it again. Now we start to see frustration creep through. Okay, now Lamar's saying, it seems like people want us to lose. Yeah, because you're an arrogant you-know-what before the year. Guys, before the year, somebody asked Lamar Jackson, how do people stop you? He said, you can't. Okay, people are stopping you, Lamar. You got figured out. Your offense stinks. It's predictable. Defenses are calling you out. You're breaking. You're done. Worst quarterback in the AFC North within 2 years. Book it, baby.
Wowza. Andy coming with the fire. And you know what? I probably don't disagree. Oh. And the only thing is that he is in the same division as Baker Mayfield.
Baker's rising, baby.
I had to get that in there. Mr. Boffle, what do you think about this prediction?
It's hot. Listen, there's no doubt that he's been figured out a little bit, and a lot of, for me, I've been a little bit disappointed in Hollywood Brown and Mark Andrews. I thought that when, you know, they would both be in the lineup, that would be a big boost to the passing game. You know, one can take the top off the defense, and Mark Andrews has been a red zone threat and has been as solid as they come paired with Lamar. But yeah, definitely something's gone awry there. They have been figured out. But like to say he's going to be the worst quarterback in the division within 2 years, I can't go that far. And you know what? You're saying that defensive coordinators are smart, Andy. I think offensive coordinators can get a bit creative, and when things get stale, maybe some things can get switched up. Maybe they change the personnel there. So I believe that the Ravens are a smart organization. Sorry, and I think that they eventually stabilize things there. But no doubt, it's been a little bit of a rough year for the flock.
Okay, Boff, we're kind of short on time, but you go with your hot take here, and then I'll follow up with mine.
Okay, well, you know what, guys? You pretty much touched on it earlier, and it's not so spicy, but you guys were talking about the Raptors and with Vivek and, you know, just kind of what kind of standing they might have and if there will be any drop-off. I'm saying that they're going to reach or possibly surpass their franchise record of 59 wins this year. I just think that don't forget, their franchise record season was before Kawhi. It was in the 2017-2018 season, I believe. Yeah, so they can get it done without the alpha superstar. You just heard from Fred VanVleet. That guy embodies the bet on yourself mentality. Seems like the Raptors are just, you know, going along as the typical Raptors, being counted out and not being talked about after losing Ibaka and Gasol. And, you know, I feel like Nick Nurse and his staff can get the most out of guys like Baines and Len. And, you know, I'm with you guys when you were saying, Matty, that the Nets might have their problems. We'll see what happens with a whole cast of stars and a brand new rookie coach and everything like that. I remember when Steve Nash was on that Laker team with Dwight Howard and Kobe and Pau Gasol that had won the title in the offseason, and how did that turn out? They didn't even make the playoffs, I don't think. So I'm all in on the Raptors once again.
All right. Okay, I'm going to throw mine out there very quickly. With all the names that the Blue Jays have been linked to, I do think that they bring in another pitcher. I think that they bring in a really good bat. The offense comes together. And the Rays have talked about trading Blake Snell. Your 2021 AL East division winners are the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yes.
That is a lot to overcome, but this organization wants to win right now. Book it. The Toronto Blue Jays win the AL East next season. Ooh. How am I doing, boys?
I'm all in. I like it. That's fiery. I have a glass of water here, man. I'm going to take a sip right now. That was hot.
It just gotta calm the taste buds a little bit.
Yep.
All right, that was a shortened version of Hot Take Tuesday, but maybe we'll get a Hot Take Thursday going because Andy and I are back on Thursday. So we gotta hit the break. But coming up after the break, the Buffalo Bills are 7-3 after the bye. They get the L.A. Chargers and Justin Herbert's show coming to town. We'll talk to Sal Capaccio from WGR Sports Radio, Buffalo Bills sideline reporter, when we come back. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara, and you're listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, alongside me, Andy McNamara. Coming up next segment, you can win Andy's pizza, so make sure that you stay tuned for that. But first, we got to talk about my Buffalo Bills, and joining us on the line, Sal Capaccio, WGR's Buffalo Bills reporter, joins us on the line. Sal, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm just excited. I want to win some Andy's pizza.
That's right, baby.
Everybody loves to win Andy's pizza. So maybe we'll keep you on the line so we can win you some.
Right.
But the Bills coming off the bye, 7-3, and not the most ideal way to go into the bye considering how they lost against Arizona. Like I said earlier to Bill Polian, I almost broke my steering wheel because I had no power and couldn't watch the game, so I had to listen to it and couldn't see everything that was going on. So a little bit frustrating, but they get the Chargers this week. How much of a litmus test is this for their defense coming off the bye, seeing how good the Chargers offense has been in recent weeks?
Yeah, I think this is a good Chargers offense with a really good, hot, young rookie quarterback. He can do a lot of things really well. Watching him on film, you know, he does not play like a rookie. He is not a guy that, as Sean McDermott said earlier in the week and kind of made some news, that, you know, doesn't see ghosts a lot. I don't think he was taking a shot at Sam Darnold. I just think he was making a point that, you know, this isn't a guy that you can rattle, you can really confuse a lot. He's plays like he's been in the league for quite a while. And let's be honest, guys, he has tremendous wide receivers, including Keenan Allen, who's just fantastic. You know, they help him out there. So I think this is a test for the Bills defense. I think the thing, though, that Bills fans should feel confident about is it's a matchup that I think the Bills have, you know, been pretty good at, which is defending another team that throws the ball pretty well down the field. They did a good job against Kansas City when they said, hey, we're not going to let you do that, Patrick Mahomes. We're going to defend that. We're going to defend Tyreek Hill. You know, teams that can be more balanced and run the ball well, they are generally the ones that give the Bills more trouble. I think if the Bills, you know, can basically do what they can normally do against this Chargers passing game, they can make them a little bit one-dimensional, and that should help them a lot.
Well, and Sal, not just throwing the ball, but throwing it, especially last game, to one guy, 19 targets to Keenan Allen, yeah. 16 catches, like obscene numbers. And you're right, Justin Herbert has been phenomenal, doesn't play like a rookie at all. But with the, you have Austin Eckler out, Justin Jackson, they're down to their third, fourth, fifth running backs. That seems to be the way, and it's been working to varying degrees, of going to Keenan Allen. When you have somebody like that, it's not like they're going to shy away. It is a good test, but when you have a talent like Keenan Allen, do you think the Bills can really shut him down or at least neutralize him as much as possible?
Well, yeah, and look, I mean, we're going to be following Eckler this week because he was actually designated to return to practice
right
today. but we don't know if he's going to play against the Bills. No, I mean, he kind of that hamstring came off the bone, which is kind of, you know, odd and weird and disgusting and all that. But, you know, that's a pretty significant injury. So we'll see. You know, he's practicing this week, and we'll see if that means he's going to play on Sunday. And if he does, it'll probably be limited snaps. But that said, that could give them a little bit more to worry about on the defensive side. And obviously Keenan Allen is the target that you're going to always worry about because he is fantastic. Look, this is why you paid Tre'Davious White that money, though, guys. I mean, Tre'Davious White is a number one corner. He's supposed to be a shutdown corner in these types of situations. Now, when you say shutdown, that doesn't mean he's going to hold Keenan Allen to zero catches. But, yeah, I mean, if you can hold a guy like that to five, six catches, you know, 60, 70 yards, I think that's a win for the Bills. And I think that's what the goal would be in a situation like this. I would expect Tre'Davious White to see a lot of Keenan Allen on Sunday. And this is why you do that. But, you know, over the last 3 years, including this year, the last 4 years, since Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier took over, since they signed Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer that first year, and they drafted Tre'Davious White that year, the Bills have been the best team in the NFL over that time at not allowing the big play. And that's what the Chargers rely on a lot. So I think they're well-equipped to handle this situation.
Sal Capaccio is our guest on Sportsnet tonight. Sal, the one thing that wasn't really made, like people didn't make a big deal out of it, but I think it was a bigger deal than originally thought, and that was the injury to Josh Allen's non-throwing shoulder. I know Matt Hasselbeck talked about it on ESPN, saying like that injury takes 3 or 4 weeks to heal, and he's going to be missing throws high, and that's kind of what we saw. And then we saw a complete turnaround from Allen after the injury seemingly was done. How healthy do you think he is now, coming off the bye? And do you think that was a bigger deal than people were making it out to be?
Yeah, it seems like it now, right? I mean, I don't think anybody really thought about it then because he came right back in that game after he left. He went into the half. He came back out at halftime. He was good to go. He played. And I don't think anybody really thought about it. But you know what was funny was he showed up on the injury report every day after that for whatever weeks. He still is. Now, look, there's no injury report today. They did practice today because of the Thanksgiving week. They flip-flopped Thursday, Tuesday, basically. So tomorrow's our first actual injury report for the week. And I'm actually really interested to see, is Josh Allen on the injury report with the left shoulder? Now, even though he's a full participant, he's been on the injury report, left shoulder, full participant, every day since that has happened that long ago. That was back in, what, week four? So, yes, for that to happen, and people say, well, why is he on the injury report? The reason is because it's obviously something he's getting treatment for, something that's bothering him, something that's a thing. So I think that you have to at least acknowledge that it probably did have some sort of impact, but the further we get away from it, obviously the better he's going to feel, the better he's going to look, and he certainly really looked good the last couple of weeks.
And Sal, a guy who was on the injury report with that continued ankle trouble, didn't practice Tuesday, John Brown coming out of the bye, and boy, it's a shame he's been so banged up this year, the season last year, to have that Stephon Diggs component and really ease him into that more natural second role. What are the expectations for him to play Sunday against the Chargers?
Good question. He was not on the practice field today, but you know, before we get too far down there, you know, usually around Wednesday every week, and again this week it's a little different. It's on Tuesday they practice; they normally don't. But usually on Wednesday, you know, if Brown's dealing with something, he generally gets a day off. He gets an extra day to heal, so that could very well be the case now. That would give him two extra days, you know, this week. Well, I guess they're practicing tomorrow, so we'll see. They're going to be off on Thursday, so tomorrow's a big day to see if he's on the field. And yeah, he's been dealing with a knee injury, and then he's dealing with an ankle injury. And you know, you can tell guys that he's just not 100%. Twice in the last several games, he had a free and clear run basically to the end zone on those little slip screens, and he got chased down. And that's just not John Brown. John Brown should have enough speed to get to the end zone, and you can tell that he's just not at 100% full speed. Now, I'd say though, if you're going to get a 75 to 80% John Brown, he's still better than a lot of receivers you can put on the field, and he still helps this offense. The guy needs more time than probably 2 weeks to heal. He's probably going to be banged up all year, but I'm interested. You know, that Arizona game, that injury looked pretty nasty, right? I mean, he came down, he caught his ankle, he caught his knee. But after the game, he was still walking around. He never left the field. He was on the sidelines, walking around. He never went back in the game. So I would say for long term, that's encouraging. But tomorrow's a big day. We'll find out about John Brown a little more tomorrow.
Sal, just in speaking about John Brown, I don't think that he is, you know, thought of as valuable as he actually is to this Bills team. When he wasn't in the lineup, teams started dropping into zone a lot more because the Bills weren't stretching the field because they wanted to get a lot of underneath stuff for Stephon Diggs or out routes to Stephon Diggs, and they didn't have that kind of deep guy that could stretch the field and make plays. How important is John Brown to this receiving core? I know Cole Beasley's been great all year, and Gabriel Davis has shown flashes, but John Brown is kind of what gets this thing going and opens up space for Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, I think if you know in basketball they say who's the glue guy, right? I think John Brown's the glue guy for this Bills offense. He kind of makes everything stick where it's supposed to stick. And what I mean by that is with the addition of Stephon Diggs, you allow John Brown now to play the number two role. And John Brown last year, he was a good number one wide receiver. He wasn't great, but he was good. He put up really good numbers. But when it came time to it, you know, the Bills, he's not a true number one wide receiver in the sense that, you know, fighting off double teams and, you know, when everybody knows it's going to him on a certain play of the game, it's going to him and, you know, he can make that catch. Not that he can't, but, you know, the Bills they had a tough time basically finding other options. Well, guess what? Now they have Stephon Diggs. He's a true number one wide receiver. The guy's fantastic and the stats are showing for it. But what he really does is he allows John Brown now to become the number two receiver. Now teams have to make a decision. I mean, if you're going to put your number one corner on Stephon Diggs, suddenly you're leaving John Brown with your number two corner. And if you're going to double team Stephon Diggs, you're leaving John Brown one-on-one. So that's what John Brown really does for this offense. I've always compared it to basketball guys where, you know, if you don't really have a true point guard and you're having your shooting guard play the point guard spot, suddenly you put a point guard in there, you're improving two spots, not just one, because now you have a true point guard and the shooting guard goes back to where he belongs.
That's a great point. Yeah, absolutely. When you talk about that. So, like you said, we'll track and make sure we're following your updates on Twitter as well. Now, Sal, when the Bills were going into that bye week, we chatted. We were talking about the running game and how it's sort of been a little weird, underwhelming. You know, the passing attack has been so good. But you have Josh Allen as the rushing touchdown leader. You have Devin Singletary kind of, okay, is he the lead back? Is he behind Zach Moss? I think there's a real opportunity here, depending how the game flow goes, because you're against the Chargers defense, who have allowed 7 rushing touchdowns over their last 5 games. For Bills fans that maybe want to try to see a little bit more balance as the weather will continue to get worse, what can you tell them? What do you think we should expect coming out of the bye with the running backs?
Yeah, you know, you're right about that, but I think the Bills are in this weird spot where, you know, there's an opportunity maybe to run the ball better, but how much do you really want to run the ball better? Because to do that, you might have to run the ball more. And I think they want to throw the ball. They want to spread the field. They want Josh Allen to be the trigger man. You know, a couple of weeks ago, whatever it was, maybe it was a Jets game, I can't remember, a few weeks ago, the Bills had literally 2 runs at halftime. Like, well, 3, but 2 handoffs. Josh Allen had the 3rd run. And Brian Daboll, after the game, said it was 2 more than he wanted. He wanted to throw the ball every single play. And why not? I mean, you have Josh Allen, who's having this MVP-type season. You have Stephon Diggs, who you paid so much for, and he's fantastic. And everything about John Brown we just talked about, the receiving game is incredible. The Bills lead the league. I think they're 2nd now behind Arizona in number of 4 wide receiver sets they use. There's no doubt the running game has to get better, guys. And I think part of that is the offensive line has to be a little better. They have not had the starting 5, I think they envisioned, on the offensive line for a full game together since the start of the season. They haven't done it at all this season because of injuries and things like that. They also, I think, are missing a bit of a power element in their run game. It seems like everything's a little bit taking too long. It's timing. They're pretty good in space, but they're not as great at going forward. I think what you need out of the run game, it's not that they have to run the ball more. They just have to be more effective and efficient when they do it. So, yeah, that could definitely happen this week. But at what expense? Because the more you run the ball, the less you're giving it to Josh Allen. And I think right now Josh Allen's your best football player.
Sal Capaccio, WGR 550's Buffalo Bills reporter, joining Matt Marchese and Andy McNamara tonight on Sportsnet Tonight. And Sal, as a longtime Bills fan myself, and you've covered the team for a long time and you've been around them for a while, you talk about that identity of being a really pass-heavy team. I can't remember the last time that this was the case, but it's really exciting to be a Bills fan, especially seeing the evolution of Josh Allen. And like Andy and I talked about, you know, earlier in the show, it doesn't even feel like Josh Allen is close to his ceiling right now.
100%. And like you, I'm also a longtime Bills fan. I grew up here. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, this is my dream, right? I'm covering the team that I grew up in. And I can tell you guys, I mean, I was a poor college student at Syracuse University coming home on a Greyhound bus for the Super Bowl years. You know what I mean? That was me back in the day. And I will tell you, the last time that this was kind of the case was 2002 era maybe, where, you know, that season with Drew Bledsoe, with Peerless Price and Eric Mould, and they were just throwing the ball all over the yard. But you're right. I mean, outside of a year here or a year there, you go all the way back to almost 20 years ago, this team, their organization, their identity has been on what? Defense and special teams and running the ball and playing in cold weather. That's not the case anymore. The Bills were always behind in what the National Football League trends were. And the trend for the last decade plus has been throw the ball, get a quarterback, spread the field, to take advantage of the new rules and things like that. Well, the Bills, they not only went out and did that this year, they surpassed it. They are, by a lot of metrics, kind of leading the way in a lot of those areas, like we just talked about with not wanting to even run the ball throughout a first half. This is incredible. And part of the reason is, a big reason, because they have Josh Allen, because of his progression and what he's able to do. And as far as his ceiling, you're right. I mean, I don't think he's gotten there yet. He still can go even higher. His progression from year one to year two to year three. And if I can, I'll give a personal plug. At my Twitter today, I actually did this. I had Josh Allen's first 10 games his rookie year, then his second year, and then this year. And I put it on my Twitter feed at Sal Sports. If you want to go look, it's amazing at the progression. But here's the thing I think that's even more important. His floor is a lot lower. When Josh has a bad game, it is not nearly as bad as it used to be. I would argue he's had one really bad game this year, and that was against Kansas City. And even that game wasn't actually that bad.
Well, and I'm just on your Twitter feed now, Sal. You're getting a like, by the way, my friend. Boom.
Oh,
click the heart. Yeah, there we go. Now we're set. But to go to your point with Josh Allen, and we've talked about this before, where it's that continuity, especially this year, so important to have that third straight year. And I said this earlier, and I don't even think it's that crazy of a thought with the reigning MVP in the conversation. If I look at the 2018 quarterback draft class, to me, Sal, I think the highest ceiling guy is Josh Allen. From where he started with the raw, like if he was unmolded clay. If you take the size, the arm, the athleticism, and you look, what does he reach it? That's who knows. But the ceiling out of any quarterback, and including my lovely Baker Mayfield, is, I have to think, the highest because of that continuity, how we've seen him continually progress. And like you said, the ceiling's getting higher, the floor is not as low. I think that there's so many possibilities here.
Yeah, you're right. And then look, I think that when we have this conversation, we can't ignore the fact that one of those players, Lamar Jackson, actually won a league MVP, right? So his ceiling is really high. We know that, right? I mean, but I agree with you. I agree that, I mean, the question would be, could Josh Allen go past that? And, you know, how consistent can Lamar be there? I think we're seeing some regression in Lamar's game, but certainly that is a really, really high ceiling that he showed. I'll tell you, if you guys ever want to have a good one-hour show or even more, one of my favorite topics in the world is exactly this. It's the 2018 draft class. I just think it's a fascinating look at quarterbacks and development, really. That's what the key word here is, development. And what happened was Baker Mayfield came in and he just wasn't developed. He had so much chaos around him. He had a great rookie year, setting records, and then they blew everybody out, you know, and he brought in new coaches and new system, and he regressed. Sam Darnold, exact same thing happened. And Sam Darnold had injuries as well. And the Jets have never built anything around Sam Darnold. The Bills had a vision and a plan for Josh Allen. They brought him in. And a lot of times, if you have the rookie year that Josh Allen had in 2018, teams are making changes. The Bills never did. They said, we're going to stay with it. This is our vision. This is our plan. They added parts. They kept their continuity, their coaching staff. They did the same and even more the next year. And now you're seeing the results of that. So it's been kind of, this is not the normal way that quarterbacks go, right? Normally, it's either you have it or you don't. If you don't have it, you're going to make changes. Josh Allen has been on so far a three-year plan. I think that plan is even further along and for more years. And it's just been a kind of a fascinating look at how he's developed compared to the others. The Bills are great at player development compared to a lot of the league right now.
All right, Sal, one more before we let you go. The Chargers, Niners, Steelers, Broncos, Patriots, and Dolphins. That's how the Bills finish up. And like you pointed out on your Twitter account, lots of primetime games, which I personally love.
Yeah.
But what's a realistic finish to the season for the remaining games? I look at this, and I see 1, 2, 3, 4. They could go 5-1 here, maybe with a loss to the Steelers. But it feels like it's open-ended right now.
100%. And look, I think they actually match up okay with the Steelers. Steelers aren't a great running team. I think the teams that give the Bills trouble, like I said, are the ones that can be more balanced and run the ball. But you're right, they're really good. There could be some trip ups there. We don't know who San Francisco is. They're Jekyll and Hyde. You don't know, who's in, who's out of their lineup every week, things like that. But, you know, guys, I mean, if you look at the schedule, and if the overall win-loss record is over 500 of their opponents, but if you take out just the 10-0 Steelers, it skews it a lot because the Bills' record of opponents is 21-29, and then you add the Steelers to 31-29. But it just goes to show you that they have a lot of opportunity. You guys ever see the movie Die Hard 2? You know, I mean, the one where Bruce Willis is at the runway and he's lighting the runway on fire and the planes are landing and all that kind of stuff, right? Well, look, here's the deal. The runway is lit. The smoke has cleared, and the landing is in sight. The Bills just have to get there. They just got to land this thing because the division is theirs to take home now. It's been since 1995. I mean, a quarter of a century, and they're right there. They have everything in front of them. All they got to do is land this puppy and get it down, and they're going to win the division.
Well, I like the thought process here, Sal. So I'll be watching on Sunday with my Zubas pants on. I haven't figured out which jersey I'll wear. Maybe I'll go with the Thurman Thomas action. But it's been a pleasure to watch them this year, and let's hope that it continues into the playoffs. Thanks for joining us tonight, Sal. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Get yourself a Steve Tasker jersey or Cornelius Bennett because they were just nominated semifinalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame as of today. So,
nice.
For my radio partner, Steve Tasker. He is a semifinalist for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's his eighth time. He's never got there, but he's gotten this far. And it's Bennett's first time ever.
Well, I'm cheering for them, and those are the next two jerseys on the list, that's for sure.
All right.
Thanks, Sal. Sal Capaccio, Buffalo Bills reporter for WGR 550. Andy, it's coming up. It's almost here. If you want to win Andy's pizza, be one of the first two people to text in with your name and location, and Mark Boffo and I, our fine producer, will be playing for a chance to win you Andy's pizza. That's coming up after the break. This is Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese. Alongside me, my co-host, Andy McNamara, and I think I know what time it is. Andy, it's time to win some of your pizza.
That's right, brother. That's right. We're giving away my pizza. So Domino's Pizza, Matt, okay? The great people they are.
It's a good pie. It's a good pie at Domino's Pizza.
It's a darn good pie. And they sent me a bunch of vouchers over the course of the year to give away to listeners, different contests and stuff. But they doubled up. Okay? Something got mixed up, and I got extra vouchers. These things expire at the end of the year. Now, God love me, I can't eat all that pizza myself. Okay? I'd love to. Can't do it. So we got to give this away, Matt. Okay? Now, here's what we're going to do. You and producer Mark Boffo are going to represent two texters who texted in, the first two, and what you will answer trivia questions for one, Boffo will answer trivia questions for another. It's in the Family Feud Fast Money style. 2 minutes, 10 questions, dramatic music, lots of pressure. Are you boys ready? Boffo, you there?
Oh, I'm here. I'm ready.
Boffo's jacked. Like, Matt, like, he wanted a piece of you before. He's like, I want Matt in Win Andy's Pizza. He is frothing at the mouth.
Yeah, well, the last time we did a trivia thing, I can't remember who I played, but I just dummied them. So let's see what Boffo brings to the table here. I'm ready to throw down.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? The first texter in was Josh from Pickering. So Josh from Pickering will be represented by Matt. Sean from Thornhill will be represented by producer Mark Boffo. Now, this is Matt, your first time playing Win Andy's Domino's Pizza. Boffo, this is your second. I believe your record is 1-1, right?
That's correct. Yes.
Yes. I think you are 1-1. So here's what we'll do. We'll get Tom Young here. Start the music, Tom. Let's get dramatic.
Ooh.
Stressful. Okay, Matt.
I hope Josh likes pizza.
That feeling, I like it. 10 questions, random trivia. The timer and Matt, if you don't know one, you can press pass. You can say pass and come back to it. Okay.
Sure.
All right. The timer begins now. Matt, other than water, what is the most consumed beverage in the world? Coffee, tea, wine, or ginger ale?
Coffee.
Name one of the four main ingredients to make beer.
Barley.
In what year was cocaine finally removed as an ingredient from Coca-Cola? 1929, 1901, 1889, or 1945?
1945.
How many pints of blood does the normal human body have?
Pints. 100.
What British royal couple recently asked to be relieved of their official duties?
Oh, Meghan and Prince Harry.
There you go. Who has more Twitter followers, Justin Bieber or Katy Perry?
Oh, I'm not going to look, I promise. It should be Katy Perry, but I'm going to go with Justin Bieber.
Okay, you have less than a minute. What Canadian band plays the opening theme song for the TV show The Big Bang Theory?
Bare Naked Ladies.
Who was the first World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion in 1979? Jerry Briscoe, Pat Patterson, Roddy Piper, or Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
Pat Patterson.
What number Super Bowl will be played in 2021?
Oh, man. I don't do Roman numerals very well. 54?
Who's the winningest manager in Blue Jays history?
Ooh,
15 seconds.
I feel like it's too obvious, Cito Gaston. I'm going to say Cito Gaston, but I think I might be wrong.
Okay, you have 10 seconds remaining. That will be the tiebreaker if you get the same amount. So, Matt, you started tough, buddy. You started 0-4, okay, but you climbed back. You then got your next four right. In fact, four out of the last five. So you have 5 out of 10 for Josh.
Wow. I'm sorry, Josh.
Pickering. We don't know how Boffo's going to do. Right? Boffo won with like five last week.
Boffo's a smart guy, though.
All right. Boff, how you feeling with that number, with that fiver on the board?
You know what? I'm feeling a little bit of pressure because I got to bring this home to T. Hill, representing the hometown for Sean right now. So, a lot of pressure, north of Steeles right now, but we'll see what happens. Right.
Everybody's listening north of Steeles. Josh from Pickering is hanging on to Matt's 5 out of 10. Producer Mark Boffo, let's get going. There's the music. Okay. Got your questions here. Give me a sec. There we go. Okay. We're going to press the start button. Your time to win Andy's Domino's Pizza begins now. Boff, the Munich Beer Festival is held in which month?
Oh, man. October?
Who is the 2020 Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Champion?
Joey Chestnut.
True champagne is only from Champagne, France. What state in the USA must bourbon be distilled to be a true bourbon?
Kentucky.
What is the highest grossing video game franchise ever?
Super Mario Brothers.
Which U.S. state drinks the most alcohol per person? Florida, New York, California, or Nevada?
Nevada.
As of April 2020, who has the most followers on Instagram? Kim Kardashian, Taylor Swift, Cristiano Ronaldo, or Ariana Grande?
Oh, man. I'm going to say Taylor Swift.
What TV series ran for more seasons, Seinfeld or Game of Thrones?
Seinfeld.
How many active players are there on an NFL roster?
54.
Which was the last Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup?
Last Canadian team is the Habs.
What year did the Blue Jays first make the playoffs?
85?
31 seconds remaining. Oh boy, Matt. That's an eight burger for Bafo here. That's
wow.
That's eight ads.
Wow.
Woo.
Good. Let's go.
That was impressive. Bafo, you rattled off the first five like it was your job. Okay? Five in a row. Very impressive. The first one you missed, it was actually Ronaldo has the most Instagram followers at 241 million. If you can believe that. And what was the other one you got wrong? Number 8, it's 53 active players on an NFL.
Of course.
That was the one that I got right.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, I need confirmation here. Okay. The only one that I was really actually kind of confident in was the Coca-Cola one, and I think I got that one wrong. Did I?
It was 1929. Yeah, you said 1945.
I remember my grandfather telling me that there was actually cocaine in Coca-Cola, and I thought
that
was crazy. Yeah. what a world.
What a drink.
Seriously.
That would pack a punch.
Hell of a drug. So I didn't do Josh any favors, so our winner is Sean from Thornhill. Sean gets Domino's Pizza.
That's right, Sean from Thornhill. So text the 590-590, get your email address, and I'll connect with you. We'll get your info, and we'll send you out two Domino's Pizza vouchers. So congratulations, Sean in Thornhill.
Way to go, Sean. You were lucky by being the second texter in, because unfortunately Josh got the short end of the stick with this idiot. But I not even to throw a plug for Domino's, but literally that's when we order pizza around here, because there's a couple of fast food pizza places and Domino's is the closest, and we almost religiously go there. They make such a good pizza, and this is not me doing this because they sponsor this segment or whatever. I'm a big fan of Domino's pizza, and every time Andy comes on the air, I'm like, to my wife, we gotta get some pizza. I think we need some.
It's
Domino's.
In the brain. I've done my job. It's in your brain.
Exactly. So Bafo, are you going to take a victory lap on me here? You've now improved to 2-1 to win Andy's pizza.
Wow, good job.
No victory lap. I'm just going to keep on stacking up these vouchers that I keep collecting.
Just stacking. Bafo, are you on with us Thursday? Are you producing Thursday for Matt and I?
No, I don't think so.
Not.
We got a rematch right there.
Friday.
I'm going to do my studying. I'm going to be ready to win Andy's pizza on Thursday. That's for sure.
Let's go.
All right. Okay, boys, that was a lot of fun, but we're going to hit the break. And coming up after the break, we've got a couple of stories that we want to get to. And one, our previous guest, Sal Capaccio, actually talked about, and that's the semifinalist name for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's coming up and more. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara. And you're listening on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, and alongside me, my co-host, Andy McNamara. So, teased it before the break, and the Pro Football Hall of Fame has announced the 25 modern era semifinalists for the class of 2021. And included in this class, and we'll kind of just roll through the list of 25, and then we can discuss, but Bryant Young, defensive tackle, formerly of the San Francisco 49ers, Hines Ward, wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who also made a cameo in The Dark Knight Rises. Don't forget that. Tony Boselli, offensive tackle with the mainly with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Clay Matthews Jr. of the Cleveland Browns and Atlanta Falcons. Fred Taylor, running back, Jacksonville Jaguars. Rondae Barber, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Willie Anderson, a tackle with the Bengals and Ravens. John Lynch, Buccaneers and Broncos. Eric Allen, cornerback, a guy that's been getting a lot of love on Twitter, actually, Eric Allen, formerly of the Eagles, Saints, and Raiders. Rodney Harrison, who you see on Sunday Night Football, a safety with the Chargers and Patriots. Leroy Butler, safety with the Packers from 1990 to 2001. Cornelius Bennett, as Sal Capaccio had mentioned, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, among other teams. Darren Woodson, Torrey Holt, wide receiver. Richard Seymour, defensive lineman. Reggie Wayne, Sam Mills, linebacker with the Saints, Zach Thomas, linebacker, Alan Faneca, who I'm shocked actually isn't even in, to be honest with you. I thought he was in. Steve Tasker, Jared Allen, Patrick Willis, Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson, and Peyton Manning. So among the first-year guys, the ones that kind of stand out to me are Peyton Manning, Calvin Johnson, Charles Woodson, and Jared Allen. I don't think that Jared Allen gets in just yet. He may not get in. Peyton Manning is obviously a shoe-in.
Guaranteed.
And to me, Calvin Johnson should be a shoe-in. The domination that Calvin Johnson had in the stretch of, I can't even remember the years, but like he was easily the most dominant receiver in football. He was
without question.
He was an absolute beast. So we're talking the years from 2011 to 2013 before injuries started to play a factor. But Calvin Johnson, for his career, was an absolute beast. His rookie year, he played 15 games. He had 756 yards. After that, his worst season was 2009 with 984 yards, and he only played 14 games that year. So he would have eclipsed the 1,000-yard mark in every season he played except one, had he played a full year. His monster year, 2012, where he had 122 catches on 204 targets. 204 targets didn't lead the league that year, by the way, for 1,964 yards. He only had 5 receiving touchdowns that year.
That's
crazy.
Incredibly disappointing.
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. But what would be really cool to me, and I don't think it's going to happen because the Hall is generally pretty hard on first-year wide receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So Reggie Wayne's not first year, but they are generally hard on receivers in general. It would be really cool to see Peyton Manning go into the Hall with Reggie Wayne. And if I'm not mistaken, Marvin Harrison isn't even in yet either.
Well, and I think another one that should be a lock is Charles Woodson.
Charles
Woodson is just that's got to be a lock of locks. I think those top three, like Peyton Manning, hello, you know, come on. And Calvin Johnson, you're right, on the wide receiver front, especially, Matt, because the differing eras are so difficult. Like some of the guys in the Hall of Fame from like the 60s or 70s, you look at the numbers, quarterbacks too, you're like, what? They're in? Like, I think like it was Terry Bradshaw, Joe Namath, like they had like as many interceptions as touchdowns. Like if you just took the names away, and you just saw the statue, like, what? So you have to take into consideration the era. But, like, Megatron was just so, like, the physical freak show that he was, I would be floored if he didn't get in. So I think, yeah, you got Manning, you got Woodson, you got Johnson. I think Clay Matthews, not just because I'm a Browns honk, right? But, like, the amount of time that dude played, 1978 to 1993 with the Browns, then 94 to 96 with the Falcons. In that later stage of his career, he led the Falcons in sacks one year. Like, he didn't win a Super Bowl, which I'm sure is against him, but that guy, the longevity and this production consistently is unreal. And he just got, last year, actually, at the Browns game we went to, he had his name put up in the Ring of Honor. We were at that game with the Rams where his son, Clay Matthews Jr., was there, which was kind of a cool moment.
Okay, so I stand corrected. Marvin Harrison got in 2016, but it would be really cool to see Peyton Manning going with Reggie Wayne. Those
with his
they
boys,
were teammates. Yes. Yeah, I think that would be a nice touch, but I'm not really counting on the Hall of Fame to get that one right. Mm. And I don't, just because of the way they are with wide receivers, despite how dominant Calvin Johnson was, I don't know if he gets in right away either. I think he might have to wait. Like, a guy like Torrey Holt has had to wait as well, and he was a stellar wide receiver. Maybe not as dominant as Calvin Johnson was for the stretch of period that he was, but a guy that certainly is deserving of the Hall of Fame. You know, you mentioned Clay Matthews with not winning a Super Bowl. I wonder how much of that plays into effect nowadays. Maybe not so much then, but as, you know, guys of our generation, maybe the, you know, like the guys from the, you know, mid-2000s, as they start to retire, how much the Super Bowl plays into effect? Because there were only a handful of teams that won the Super Bowl during their careers. The Patriots had a long string of domination. The Steelers won a couple, and you had, you know, you had
Cowboys.
the Cowboys. Yeah, there's a bunch of guys that are kind of in that era that never won Super Bowls because there was so many dominant teams. So I wonder how much that plays into effect when these guys are looking at the overall body of work.
Well, from what, and I've interviewed Tony Grossi a few times on this topic, and he works for ESPN Cleveland, but he's also a Hall of Fame voter. He's taken us behind the scenes a few times. He says, first of all, it is like the day, it's like 14 hours. Like he said, you're just exhausted. You're squirrely by the end of it. But like people make the arguments, and he said, if it's close, the championship will push a guy over the edge. So it seems like it's not necessarily the main thing, but if it's close between player A and player B, and player A was on a championship team, that guy's probably going to get the nod.
Yeah, and that does make sense, and I feel like eventually these guys will get in, the guys that are kind of close, or maybe they don't have a championship. There are years where it does open up and they will get in. But like we said, I'm pretty sure that, not pretty sure, Manning gets in. Calvin Johnson is close. I think Charles Woodson gets in right away. And I do think, like I said, Calvin Johnson should get in. But who knows with this voting system and how it works. We're certainly privy to only a certain amount of information. But I wanted to switch gears and kind of look at another story. And that is, there's a Hulk Hogan movie coming up, and I know this is right up your alley.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Chris Hemsworth is going to be playing Hulk Hogan, and Hulk Hogan has actually put out some pictures on Instagram of what Hemsworth looks like as he prepares for the role, and this guy took the role seriously. He is jacked up. I'm actually really looking forward to see what they do with this movie.
I cannot wait. I haven't seen. I'm going to go on the Hulkster's Instagram because I am a follower of the Hulkster, of course. Let me see here. Holy cow. Look at that dude's arms.
He's
good
a big dude.
Gravy. Yeah, that's legit. Like, and we have to remember, too, Hulk Hogan during the steroid era, you know, that's all common knowledge now. Hulk Hogan was a legit, like, 330. The 24-inch pythons, like that wasn't like a ruse. Like, those arms were stacked. So to see him like that, I just wonder how they're going to do the story, how they're going to have, is it going to be like from when he first got into the business? Because Hogan was in a rock band in Florida before, and he got discovered, and he got his leg broken, first of all, up in Minnesota by like a legendary Japanese wrestler, and then he kind of evolved all throughout. So I wonder, like, in this movie, what range they're going to do of his life, because there's a lot there.
Well, not only that, the WWE has so much control over what can go to air and what can't. Like, I heard that there was going to be a Vince McMahon, and I think it's still in the works, but Bill Simmons was doing something, I believe, on a Vince McMahon documentary or movie or something
that'd
be
so
or
cool.
Other. And it would be great, but the problem is that the stuff that you really want to know, you might not get, because the WWE really does control the narrative when it comes to all these things. Like, you watch there was a documentary on ECW that was on the WWE Network. And right. It was tame compared to some of the other ones that I had seen. And it's all about controlling the narrative, and they're trying to appeal to a much younger audience than they would have in the past. A lot of children. And they really want to appeal to the female demographic. So it is interesting, but I'm curious to see what exactly we do get to see and how much stuff comes out from that movie that we've never heard before.
Well, and we have to remember, too, publicly traded company, right? Vince McMahon is the head. So they're not going to be putting out some, like, I think, super tell-all doc that deep dives into maybe some negative things that Vince has done over the years, mainly because of that. But I'm with you. I hope, even if we don't get, like, super dirt type of thing, at least if you make it interesting, because his father and grandfather, promoters into wrestling and boxing, going back, how he took over, how he got death threats, Vince McMahon, from the territory guys, like the NWA before, like when Vince was going national, he would get death threats. Other wrestlers, Matt, would go to the towns where then WWF were and try to threaten him and other wrestlers to get out of their town. Like, it was like war until Vince eventually took over, you know, the wrestling world.
Yeah, it really is fun to go back and kind of look at the evolution of wrestling. And I didn't really mean for this to turn into a wrestling segment, but here we are.
Fine by me.
Guys that, yeah, exactly. And guys that have watched it throughout our years on this planet. I always enjoy looking back on, I've watched Monday Night Wars more than once. If you are a wrestling fan and you haven't seen it, go back and look at it. It's great just to watch all the backstories and what happened, you know, when WCW and WWF at the time were going head to head. Andy, the one thing that I wish happened, and I was always a big fan of this storyline, I just hated, you know, how they couldn't get the top guys for it. And I feel like you know where I'm going with this. But the Invasion storyline could have been epic. And I say epic in full capital letters, the largest font that you can get, because not having guys like Flair and Nash, Hall, Sting, Goldberg, like there's your five. And they had none of them.
Huge.
That were able to do it. Even Diamond Dallas Page wasn't a part of that storyline. He only came through later on in a feud with The Undertaker, if I remember correctly.
That's right.
So that's the one thing that I really wish happened. It's like the big what if. Like, what if Wayne Gretzky was a Maple Leaf? You know, what if Scott Norwood hits that field goal and doesn't go wide right? Like, there's so many different things. What if Drew Bledsoe doesn't get hurt and Tom Brady doesn't come into that game? You know, like, there's lots of what ifs. For me, I know it sounds kind of like childish, but that is one of my greatest what ifs, because I would have loved to have seen that with the real stars back in the day.
Man, I'm totally with you. Like, that could have been the biggest angle in wrestling history. It really would have, with the star power. Now, over the years, from what I've learned, there's some great podcasts. There's 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff and Something to Wrestle with Bruce Pritchard, the old brother love. And they said essentially the reason that didn't happen was because WCW and Turner had guaranteed contracts. So the wrestlers had, some of them, up to a year and a half of fully guaranteed cash that they would have had to give up and that WWE wasn't willing to match. So they're just like, I'll see you like in a year and a half when my money's up, and then we'll come to an angle. And that's kind of how it developed. But you're so right. If that could have been sort of wiped away or brought in, the money you could have printed whatever money you wanted. That would have been the biggest thing ever.
Again, one of the things that I wish happened that unfortunately didn't come to fruition. So, like I said, didn't mean for it to turn into a wrestling segment, but happy that we did it.
Yeah, anytime, man.
It's been a really busy offseason on the West Coast, specifically with the LA Clippers and the LA Lakers. Joe Morgan, contributor to Sporting News, who covers both teams, will join us, and we'll talk about Montrezl Harrell, you know, switching locker rooms within the Staples Center, and what the Clippers do from here after such a terrible exit. That's coming up. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara, and you're listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, alongside me, Andy McNamara. You can follow us on Twitter at MattSN590 and at AndyMC81. Our producer tonight is Mark Boffo, and our technical operator making sure that we stay on the air is the wonderful Tom Young. And joining us on the line right now, Joe Morgan, contributor to the Sporting News covering the Clippers and the Lakers, joins us on the line. Joe, how are you tonight?
What's going on, guys? I am wonderful. It's unbelievable that basketball is less than 30 days away. I'm kind of in shock, but I'm happy as can be.
Especially after what's happened and what's transpired over the course of, as we get close to, almost a year now. It really is amazing. I wasn't sure if the league was good. I was really expecting a February start, and here we are with camps opening up soon, and we're gonna have basketball by Christmas. I'm just as amazed as you are that this thing is gonna get underway and hopefully without any hiccups.
It's pretty unbelievable that they've been able to pull this off. Look, six months ago we didn't know when we would see basketball again, and for them to be able to get through the postseason in the bubble in Orlando, and now to be able to get into a 72 game season. Really is nothing short of miraculous, and that has everything to do with Adam Silver and the owners and the players buying in. Andy, my concern at the beginning was if the players would understand the ramifications on monetarily moving forward, because that is going to be an issue. It continues to be an issue, and they're going to have to deal with that. But the important thing was we need to be able to recoup as much money as we possibly can from this season, get it back to normal so that next year we can hopefully have fans in the stands and we can start making all of our money back. It's exciting that it's happening. Quite frankly, it's hard for me to wrap my head around because the season just ended, right? The Lakers just won a championship. And for me to now be talking about the next season and free agency happening so quickly right off the bat, it's been interesting, but I think I'm coming around to it.
Well, it's going to have – the Raptors just had the longest – title reign in NBA history. The Lakers, if they don't win, could have the shortest title reign in NBA history, just depending on the season. But Joe, what I'm interested to see is, okay, we have the teams that went deep in the playoffs and were in the bubble, but there's a whole bunch that weren't, and they haven't played basketball in what seems like forever. And it's not, even with the training camp, it's still not that long. I wonder what the fall off or how long it'll take those teams that weren't in that Orlando bubble to get back up to speed.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not something that portion of it doesn't concern me that much. You got at the beginning of every NBA season, and really the beginning of all seasons in sports, there's a lag. The first couple of games are obviously very exciting, but that first couple of weeks, basically guys are trying to get their legs underneath them. That happens every year. So I expect these guys, most of them are young. They've all been working out. They've all been shooting. I expect them to get it underway pretty quickly. My concern is actually the opposite end of it. Are these guys who have gone deep, they played these games in Orlando, the Lakers and LeBron obviously being one of them, what happens that first couple of months? We've heard a lot about this, about LeBron and even AD saying, look, we don't know what's going to happen as far as our playing time the first month or so. And I think that that's correct for them to view it that way. So just take LeBron James, for example. At his age, the amount of seasons and years he's played, the amount of minutes, I think it's unfair to expect him to handle a full workload months after he just went deep into the postseason, won a championship in very trying circumstances. So I expect that first month, maybe month and a half, for the Lakers in particular, probably a few other teams, to see very much a reduced workload for the stars. And look, let's just what the Lakers and a few of these teams have done allows that to happen with some of the free agency pickup, allows LeBron and AD to take a seat and let the other guys carry the majority of the load, at least at the beginning of the year.
Joe Morgan is our guest here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan on Sportsnet tonight. He covers the Lakers and Clippers for the Sporting News. And Joe, the one the one really curious, and maybe it shouldn't even be a curious move for me, was Montrezl Harrell basically putting his stuff on a cart and saying, okay, I'm going to go to the other side, this other locker room in the same arena. To me, that looks like it's really telling about what's gone on with the Clippers, because I know that people want us to think that Kawhi Leonard is this great leader, but whenever Kawhi Leonard has won a championship, he hasn't been the leader. So to make this assumption that he's just going to turn around a team because he's a vocal guy, which he's not, or he's just going to do it with his play, listen, I think that there's a flaw in that statement. So does the Harrell signing with the Lakers tell us all we need to know about what's gone on with the Clippers?
Absolutely. I think it tells you everything you need to know. I mean, I'll just take a step back. 2019, when the Clippers took the Warriors to 6 in the first round, that was an underdog team, and that was one of the best locker rooms I've ever been in, period. Like, the love and affection that the teammates had for them, it was just a fun locker room. They were underdogs. Everything was great. That's when Trez, Lou Williams, and Pat Bev were leaders of the team. Then you fast forward to this past year where Kawhi and PG get into the mix and everything changed. I can say this from a media person's perspective. It was not fun. It was cold. People were not particularly happy. I can't speak specifically for players, but I can tell you that there were a lot of rumors that Trez wasn't exactly happy. And a lot of that probably had to do with the changing of the guard and no longer being the focal point of the organization. Kawhi and PG, Kawhi in particular, as you guys know, they're different guys, and it wasn't the same kind of energy. And personally, I think Trez wanted out of that. I also think a lot of it had to do with Doc Rivers not being there anymore. Doc and Harrell were very close. Montrez was Doc's guy. And as soon as that happened, I kind of had the inclination that this might be over for Trez with the Clippers. The shocking thing is going to the other locker room across the hallway. It's not like these two teams particularly love each other. And this just adds a little spice, a little fuel to the fire in that rivalry. I think it's going to be fascinating. And the other side of it also is Trez didn't make nearly what we thought he was going to make. All year long, we thought, we always had conversations about that contract wasn't going to get closer to 20. And now that he's almost at the mid-level exception, it's pretty surprising that that's the money he settled at.
Well, Joe, with most of the heavy lifting now done in free agency, there are always trades here and there, who knows, right? But when we look at how things stand now in the West, does anything dramatically change to you as far as how you'd expect that conference to play out and who gets to the finals?
I think the Lakers have improved. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think the Dennis Schroeder and Harrell is I think he has a lot off the bench, right? There's no doubt about that, and he's going to take some of that workload and the scoring workload off of Braun and AD. But I like what they did with Wesley Matthews and Gasol. So I do think they've improved, and they're kind of gone in a different direction. Now, you got to remember, they're this kind of huge team with Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee. They're kind of a little bit different. I still think they're the best team. I think it's still Clippers-Lakers, because I love the Serge Ibaka addition for the Clips. I still think they have a couple of moves left up their sleeve. But the Klay Thompson injury in Golden State really changes things. Because if Klay was healthy, I do think they had a chance to compete with the Lakers and the Clippers in the Western Conference. And now that's gone. Phoenix with Chris Paul obviously has improved. Maybe they're a five seed. I think for the most part in the West, it's going to be somewhat similar at the top from what we saw last year. Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, and then maybe Portland or Phoenix. But I do like the moves that the Lakers have made. And, hey, a team that just won a championship getting better, there's something to that.
Joe Morgan is our guest from Sporting News, covers the Lakers and the Clippers. Joe, the one thing that has kind of stood out to me, at least from the standpoint of, is it maybe too much kind of too soon? And I totally agree with you that the Lakers are basically planning to not play their stars in every game this year. And especially at the beginning, you know, LeBron's going to be getting a lot of time off. But they've brought in a lot of guys here. Is there the potential for some unrest with players because they're going to be asked to take a back seat, more of a back seat than they ever have? They may be asked to do less offensively than they ever have. Is there the potential for, maybe disaster is the wrong word, but for some serious unrest?
normally I would say yes, Andy, but this is LeBron James, and he's the most respected player in the NBA, not just by the fans, and it's by his peers. These guys worship him. They grew up watching him. What is this, his 18th season now? They've been watching him forever. I don't see any issues like that moving forward. I actually think what the Lakers have done, interestingly enough, is become more adult. Like Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee, you had J.R. Smith, Dion Waiters. There were some clowns on that team, man. And now they have replaced that with mature guys that have been in this league for a long time. You got a guy in Gasol who just wants to win another ring, Trez who wants to prove something, Montrezl Harrell who clearly has something to prove. I think that the Lakers are going to be completely fine as far as locker room culture, and I do think that they have improved as a team. It's scary because that West, when I looked at it before that Klay Thompson injury for the Warriors, I thought was going to be really tough to get out of. It's not as deep as I thought it was going to be. It depends on what the Clippers do. If the Clippers can make a trade here, because I don't think it's going to be the team they have at the end of the year entering the postseason, if they can make a move, then they'll be up in the air. But I just think the Lakers, when you look at them on paper right now, it's like, man, I just don't know who's beating them as long as LeBron stays healthy. That's always the caveat.
Yeah, that's the main thing. And Joe, when you look at the East in comparison, you say the West not necessarily as deep as maybe we once thought. The East, really deep. And you have the Raptors re-signing Fred VanVleet, so they have their core. You got the draft pick, couple nice little spot of sort of under the radar adds at center. And then the rest of the depth in that East. It's interesting to me because it's not like you have the old superpower Golden State Warriors where it was like, well, how far are we going to get till they eliminate us? Or LeBron and the Cavs. Okay, well, we just have to hope we can get that far and then they'll eliminate us. Like there's a lot of really good teams, but not I wouldn't say anybody unbeatable. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Milwaukee with the Jrue Holiday acquisition obviously makes them better, and they had to do that in order to make Giannis happy, and we'll see what happens with the Supermax with him moving forward. But with Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Miami, Philly, Brooklyn, my goodness, I totally forgot about Brooklyn even in that statement. Yeah. We haven't seen him in a year. Like, there is a lot of talent in the East. The disparity between the two conferences is finally creeping closer to even. I wouldn't say it's quite there yet, but we're finally getting back to that point, which is really exciting. I think the interesting thing is there's obviously a couple of moves here that could really shift the East. Like the James Harden thing, I don't know what's going on there, and obviously it's not going well, but if he winds up in the East in either Philly or Brooklyn, you now do have a super team in the East and a team in the East that is very capable of beating anybody out West. I think this could be one of the most competitive seasons we've seen in a really long time. And man, it couldn't come at a better time for all of us, you know, all of us sports fans who have starved for so long, and now it's just rapid fire, baby.
Joe, one more before we let you go. I just wanted to focus back on the Clippers here. And what kind of a task do you think is ahead for Tyronn Lue here? Because we know about what happened in the playoffs. Guys were unhappy with the load management, and things kind of went south, and we certainly saw what happened with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard in that elimination game. Is this job even tougher than the one he had when he was with Cleveland?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Coaching LeBron James is really hard, so I don't know. But I think it's pretty difficult with the fact that PG and Kawhi could potentially walk at the end of this year. Like, you have 1 year to get this done. This isn't some kind of situation where you're given 2 or 3 years to win. You got to get it done now, because if both those guys end up walking because you didn't do a good enough job and you didn't get to a championship or win it, and all the draft picks you gave up to get those two guys, the Clippers are in complete and utter rebuild. It's not an easy gig. There's no doubt about that. But I do think Lou, as a player's coach, a guy who has won a championship as a coach and as a player, and who knows these guys, obviously, will be able to get to them. And I think play a brand of basketball that's a little more flexible, a little more analytical than it was under Doc. And I think the guys will respond. But to your point, this in no way is it a cakewalk gig.
Joe, thank you very much for taking some time for us tonight. I really appreciate it. Great stuff.
Always appreciate it, guys. Have a good night.
Joe Morgan, contributor to Sporting News, covering the Lakers and the Clippers. And Andy, I agree with Joe. That Clippers job is not a cakewalk. They lack a veteran, a good veteran point guard, someone that can distribute. I love Patrick Beverley, but he's not a guy that should start on a championship team. And I think the leadership thing is really understated with Kawhi Leonard. If you look at his time in San Antonio when they won championships, he had Tim Duncan around him. He had Manu Ginobili. He had Tony Parker. He had Bruce Bowen. Like, there were other guys that were the leaders, and he was a great player, and he proved that on the court, but he was never a leader. When he came to Toronto, he wasn't the leader. Kyle Lowry was the leader. And Kyle Lowry took a lot off his plate. So I think for people to believe that Kawhi Leonard is this uber leader off the court and he just his silence is deafening and all, I think that's BS. I think he needs a guy that's going to be the alpha in the room to take the pressure off of him and just let him play. And the Clippers don't have that.
No, they don't. And Kawhi's a lead-by-example guy. And great players. Not everybody is this tremendous, inspirational leader, rip the jersey off and follow me, man. No, it's not Kawhi. We know that. We saw that. He will go out. He'll play his butt off. He'll play at an MVP level. He's going to go home. That's all, right? Like, and that's fine. But that's why I think in a lot of sports, when you have a stacked team, it gets so undervalued the presence and the job of the coach or manager, whatever sport it is. And that's why I think for like that Cito Gaston, going back with those Jays team to go like way back, Matt, I don't think he ever got the proper credit because like anybody could have managed that team. That's BS and absolute garbage because look, no matter what era, you get superstars together. The Eagles, you got to manage that. That takes the right guy. It was Cito in Toronto. And heck, it was Nick Nurse with the Raptors, and we'll see what happens with the Clippers.
Yeah, Ty Lue is in for a rough ride because I just look at that team, and I think the Lakers are so much further ahead than so many teams because they've insulated so well. And yeah, they have the benefit of, you know, having guys take less money to go play with LeBron James for the chance to win a championship. Like, I get that. I would probably do it too. I don't have to worry because I'll never be in that situation. But there is an advantage to that. You go and get a guy like Dennis Schroeder who fits in really well with this team. Then you get, you know, you bring in Marc Gasol, who's a great veteran guy off the bench and has been there and can play good defense and can help you run an offense. Like, there's lots of good things that they've done. I love the Montrezl Harrell ad. So I do worry about, like I said to Joe, I do worry about the implosion factor, though, because guys are having to do less than they would normally do. And like you said, these guys have egos. They're not yes. saints here. They have to be massaged just like, actually more so than anyone else. So I'm really curious to see how that dynamic's going to work.
It's going to be fascinating to see because, yeah, you can have all the star power. Like Joe said, you got this year, okay? And this year is starting in a few weeks. Like the year is quick. Then those two stars could leave. They could very well leave. Now, I want to know with the Brooklyn Nets, we talk egos, and we chatted a little earlier, right? You got Kyrie Irving and the talk of, like, James Harden going to the Nets. I personally would love to see that. Because I think they would implode with the Eagles. All those guys need the ball. All those guys think they're the man. Come on. Right? Like, okay, on paper it looks great. You want, oh, by the way, first-time head coach, poor Steve Nash? How the heck is he going to manage that? If I'm the Nets, I know the talent of James Harden is huge, but there's no way those egos in that room could make that work. I would just be floored, and it, like that is, you grab popcorn and you want like a 24/7 camera on that team to see what happens.
Well, yeah, and I had this conversation with somebody last week, I want to say, just chatting about the idea of James Harden going to Brooklyn, and I said, okay, so So Kyrie Irving wanted to leave Cleveland because he didn't want to be in LeBron's shadow because he felt like he could win a championship without LeBron James. Okay, fine. That didn't work. So clearly the proof is in the pudding here when it comes to Kyrie Irving. Great player, not a leader. So Kyrie Irving, in this situation, if James Harden were to go to Brooklyn, Kyrie Irving is option three in that offense. And that's great. That's a great problem to have because Kyrie Irving is such a talented offensive player. But do we really believe that Kyrie Irving wants to be number three? James Harden's the guy that's going to be carrying the ball up the floor, and the plays are going to run through Harden or Durant. So do I really think that Kyrie Irving's going to take to that very lightly? No. And if they trade for James Harden, Kyrie Irving is going to be gone because within 2 weeks, he will have tried to murder James Harden, is my guess.
Oh, well, yeah, he didn't like being number two. He's going to want to be number three? Or two and a half?
That's not going to work. That's not going to work.
No. That's why. Hey, you know what? As a Toronto Raptors fan, bring in James Harden. Come on in, pal. Great. That's one. If James Harden comes in, the water's nice here. dip your toe. Come on. Like, dude, if James Harden comes to the Nets, I honestly feel you can wipe the Nets off as competition for the Raptors because they will just eat themselves. They'll cannibalize themselves, and it'll be a mess. So yeah. I say bring it. Go for it. How that team is built now with those personalities, let's go. Come on, Harden. Yeah. Come on in.
I'm totally on board with that. But speaking of building a team, Andy, we're getting closer to fantasy football season ending. We're getting closer to the playoffs. Yeah. Tonight is a big night because you could go out and get some players on the waiver wire that could help you in your championship run. And Andy and I are going to help you get there coming up next. We're going to look at the waiver wire, the fantasy football waiver wire, and help you win your week and help you get a fantasy football championship. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese, alongside me, Andy McNamara. Behind the glass, DJ Tom Young spinning the tracks. A little Beastie Boys action. I love it. Way to go, Tom Young. Our producer tonight is Mark Boffo. So, Andy, it's our waiver wire Tuesday. I know you put out an article for sportsnet.ca, a shameless plug here for myself. My 10 fantasy thoughts comes out tomorrow. And, you know, looking at some waiver targets for this week, it's a really interesting week because you got to get to this point in the season and it should feel like there's nobody available, but there are plenty of guys out there that can make an impact for your fantasy team down the stretch here because there's some real talent that's out there that nobody wants to pick up apparently. So I'll let you start with your first one, and then we'll kind of go back and forth here on who we like and kind of why we like them.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. You win championships based on the waiver wire. You draft your stars, you win on the waiver wire. And that's the key. So in my article I put out, I only focus on players available in under 50% of leagues because, you know, if some star is available in 2%, it doesn't do anybody any good, right? So that's sort of what my focus always is, those guys. And really this year, I think, Matt, more than ever, is it's not just the injuries you track. It's who's missing time because of COVID. Then you got to go get that backup who's going to all of a sudden jump in. We saw it with DJ Dallas in Seattle, Carlos Hyde a little bit, Travis Homer. So with that in mind, Gus Edwards is going to be the most added running back in fantasy football this week. And it's because you're not going to have Mark Ingram. You're not going to have J.K. Dobbins. And that, to me, at least shows with the Ravens, it's unpredictable. You can't pick a running back each week. It's a guessing game. Right now, You're going to have Gus Edwards and pretty much Lamar Jackson as the two guys who are going to run. Pittsburgh's defense, they're tough. We know they've allowed the seventh fewest total rushing yards in 2020, but he's going to get goal line work and he's going to get some volume. So I think if you're in running back trouble as an RB2, RB3, maybe even a flex depending, at least you got to go try to get him.
Yeah, I'm of the same opinion when it comes to Gus Edwards, and I do believe that we are seeing the emergence of the rookie running back. So I think this might be a 1 week thing. The snap shares were heavily in favor of J.K. Dobbins, but you're right. There's nobody else there. Like Justice Hill, he's not gonna do anything for you this week. I'm not gonna lie. I had high hopes for Justice Hill coming out of Oklahoma, but that didn't really work out. But Gus Edwards this week, they're going up against the Steelers, who they just ran for over 200 yards against, you know, just a couple weeks ago. So it's not like they are absolutely incapable right now of doing something. It's just that the offense, like you said, has been so unpredictable and you just don't know where it's going. Another running back for people to kind of take a look at here for me, in PPR formats, I'm looking at James White. I know that the season hasn't gone very well. God knows he's had enough to deal with personally. And then on the field, he just hasn't been getting the same type of usage. But Rex Burkhead's done for the year. He's rostered in only 40% of Yahoo leagues. He had 9 targets versus Houston on Sunday. He's going to get the bulk of that passing down work because obviously Rex Burkhead is out, but Damian Harris doesn't offer you a ton in the passing game. He had a few catches at Alabama his final year. Sony Michel he was a decent pass catcher in college, but hasn't shown to be that at the NFL level. So James White in that offense, which does use the running backs a fair bit, is going to have some value going forward here as Rex Burkhead's done for the year. So I really like James White.
Yeah, I think that's, especially in PPR, that's sort of the caveat there for sure. And the trouble we're running into in New England with Cam Newton, of course, again, sort of like in Baltimore, but I think Cam distributes the ball a bit better, is you got a running quarterback. But yeah, in the game plan I would set out, I like that James White pick. That's a good one. For me, I'm looking at, and I'm a defensive streamer, okay? That's my sort of strategy. You go in and you sort of pick the matchups. I think the New York Giants defense, the DST, Matt, is a smash spot. Why? You're playing the Bengals. Usually Joe Burrow's going to throw it 40 times on you. Now we're at Ryan Finley. No one's shaking in their boots over Ryan Finley, Matt, okay? These are Ryan Finley's numbers. So last year, okay, a terrible 47.1 completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, winless in 3 starts. And when you look at the Giants as a whole, they've gradually been getting better, quietly been getting better. And their defense, 2 or more sacks in every game, 8 total interceptions, 7 fumble recoveries. I think when you look at a guy, they're going to have to run the ball. You can't trust Ryan Finley. I think that's a nice pickup for a defense that's owned in just 17% of Yahoo League. So they're readily available.
Yeah, and the one guy that kind of gets overlooked and the job that he's done on that defense is James Bradbury. Like, he has locked down wide receiver ones basically all season. He has been so good against the other team's basically best player when he's in a one-on-one situation. And I agree. And the other team, and I haven't looked to see how much they're owned, but they've been really good all year, but you've talked about it before in your videos and on the fantasy show on Sunday mornings. Everybody check that out, 8 to 10.
Thanks,
with
brother.
Andy and Sho Ali. Anybody playing the New York Jets right now, and that's the Miami Dolphins this week.
But the
one thing about the Dolphins is that they've been really good basically all season. I think it's a really underrated defense. Brian Flores has done a really good job with them. But offensively, in terms of waiver wire pickups, I really like Michael Pittman Jr. And I said it last week. Go out and get him because there's not a lot of talent on that in that receiving core. T.Y. Hilton's done. Zach Pascal is just a guy. Paris Campbell's still out. Michael Pittman's rostered in only 44% of Yahoo leagues. And to me, a guy that can make plays in an offense that still wants to throw the ball a lot, he's legit. He's a big-bodied receiver who can make big plays. He has at least 15 fantasy points in PPR scoring the last 2 weeks. Got his first career touchdown this past week as well. I really like Michael Pittman because that's an offense that, you know, people could say what they want about Phillip Rivers. The offense actually hasn't been that bad this year.
It's been growing, and it takes some time. He's been in the same place in San Diego and L.A. forever, right? So it takes some time to get that new familiarity. And I had Michael Pittman in my Saturday Sleepers article on Sportsnet.ca last week, Matt, so I am 100% with you. Look at the emergence of rookie wide receivers this year. Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins, CeeDee Lamb before all the Dallas stuff. And for T.Y. Hilton, I just got to put this out there with T.Y. Hilton. Anybody just holding on to him for like name recognition, get this in your head. T.Y. Hilton has not had over 90 receiving yards, Matt, in a game since Andrew Luck was his quarterback. Think about that.
Whoops.
And, oops, and he hasn't had a touchdown since week 13 of last year. He's gone. T.Y. Hilton is done. So I'm 100% with you on Michael Pittman. I absolutely love that pick there. And another guy who I think people are still hanging on to the fact that in Philadelphia, he was not good. He wasn't. He busted out in Philadelphia. But guess what? With the Las Vegas Raiders, real good. Nelson Agholor, Matt. Okay? And this guy, you need wide receiver help. I've been pounding the table for weeks in articles on the fantasy show, everything, the fantasy minute videos. He's available in 80% of leagues. Check out some of these numbers, okay? Now, look, he's got 6 receiving touchdowns. This guy stepped up with injuries on that line. In games, in double-digit games, over 14 fantasy points or more, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He has 2 games of 20 or more fantasy points, 100-yard game, multiple targets, every game receptions. The guy just keeps producing. And that's a case where I think you look who they're playing, the Atlanta Falcons giving up the 3rd most fantasy points to wide receivers. Hey, you want wide receiver help, man? You can go get yourself Nelson Agholor.
You could tell that it's 2020 that we're talking about Nelson Agholor in a glowing
light. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it's
isn't that
like
crazy?
I think I want to say that I wrote this in my 10 fantasy thoughts for this week. Everything's kind of a blur. Mondays and Tuesdays are an absolute grind.
Yeah.
But 2020 in itself has been a blur. If I had told you that going into week 11 that you would be starting Salvin Ahmed, Kalen Ballage, Taysom Hill, and I think there was one more guy, I can't even remember, and that would have been a good idea, then I would have been committed. Like they would have locked me up, thrown away the key, and I would have been looking at white padded walls for the rest of my days. But that's kind of where we're at right now. And your point about how you win championships, yes, you win, you know, the first 6 games of your season at the draft, you win a championship at the waiver wire. That's the way that this game is played now. It's not the same as it was. Unless you have deep rosters and such, and then that's a totally different bag of beans. But, you know, like I look at a guy this week like Tim Patrick, who's rostered in 21% of Yahoo leagues. He's got 23 targets over his last 3 games. Double-digit fantasy points in PPR scoring in 6 of his last 7. And Drew Lock loves throwing him the ball. Mm-hmm. He loves putting it up there for him to go get. And Drew Lock is, you know, certainly not the greatest quarterback in the world, but Tim Patrick has shown that he could be a really reliable receiver. And he was a guy that was, you know, after they drafted Jerry Jeudy, nobody thought too much about. And then Cortland Sutton tears his ACL and his season's done. And Jeudy struggles a little bit out of the gate. And ho-hum, here's Tim Patrick. That Broncos receiving core and just pass catchers in general, I don't think they get enough credit for how good they actually are. Because if you look at those pass catchers, there's Cortland Sutton when he's healthy. There's Jerry Jeudy. There's Tim Patrick, Noah Fant, and KJ Hamler. That's pretty good. And then you've got both running backs who can also catch the ball really well. They've really put pieces in place for Drew Lock to succeed here.
And now it's going to be on Drew Lock staying healthy and show he can be that guy to fully utilize and exploit those weapons.
I am so with you on Tim Patrick, Matt. Yeah, 300-plus yard games. Had one last week against Miami. And we talked about that Miami defense, no joke. And now you're playing New Orleans, whose defense, right, sort of middle in the pack when it comes up to fantasy points given up to wide receivers. Good, real good defense. But yeah, like Tim Patrick, again, is in the same sort of vein as a Nelson Agholor, to that you can go pick them up and slide them in. If people want to overlook it, that's cool. You know, you take advantage of that. My next guy, I'm going to give a tight end because, Matt, my goodness, the tight end position.
It's a mess.
Ugh. Like, you can be a tight end like 5 this year and have like 40 yards. Like, it's gross. So I'm dusting this guy off, okay? I'm going to want to hear a lot of this coming up on Thanksgiving Day in America. Dalton to Dalton. I want Andy Dalton to be thrown to Dalton Schultz. You can pick him back up off the waiver wire. 21% ownership in Yahoo and ESPN leagues. When Dalton came back, say what you want about Andy Dalton. Is he better than Ben DiNucci? Yup. Is he better than Garrett Gilbert? Yeah. The stars started to come back a little bit, right? We started to see that. If Andy Dalton can get healthy, I think we can move Dalton Schultz back into the tight end one conversation, which isn't saying that much because of how bad things are. But he caught the winning touchdown, his first score since week 4. And throughout this whole thing, his target share has remained at a healthy level. So I think when we look at this, you're going up against Washington, 11th most fantasy points to tight ends. Dalton Schultz, if you're in trouble, makes a lot of sense this week.
Yeah, and Andy Dalton does have some success in making tight ends relevant. Like, he made Tyler sure. Eifert relevant. CJ Uzomah had some success. Like, there's a track record there of Andy Dalton making guys work at that position. And I'm totally on board. I think when you're talking about, especially at the tight end position this year, at this point, you're just looking for opportunity, and Dalton Schultz is getting opportunities. Now it's just a matter of kind of putting them together and working him back into the offense. I'm really disappointed in how the season has gone for a guy like Michael Gallup in that Dallas offense, because I was expecting big things from him. But, you know, it happens. I think he bounces back next year when Dak Prescott comes back. My last guy, and then we can kind of move on and just talk general fantasy terms here. Derek Carr. Honestly, Andy, I'm surprised at how good he's been. Bill Polian earlier in the show spoke glowingly about that. Actually, if you check out the fan Twitter account at Fan590, that interview with Bill Polian is up there. So make sure you go have a listen. He was great. But Derek Carr is rostered in only 36% of Yahoo leagues. He gets, and listen to this, the Falcons and the Jets in the next 2 games. He has at least 2 touchdown passes in 7 of 10 games this season, as well as at least 239 passing yards or more in 7 of 10 games this year. He's a really, really solid player under John Gruden. And I'm surprised that I'm even saying this, but if you are hurting for a QB, guess what? Derek Carr is a guy that can really help you down the stretch here because of those 2 matchups. And if you're hemorrhaging at quarterback and you need to try and get some extra points just to get in, Derek Carr might actually be your guy.
Boy, and Matt, how about this? I'm kind of digging in a DraftKings stack. If you're looking to save a little value, how about a Derek Carr Nelson Agholor stack? Spend
that
elsewhere.
Works.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
You go up against,
I agree with that.
Atlanta, the most fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks. Yeah, sling it, man. Just fire it up. Like, I think that's a great move. And I'm totally with you on Carr. Has he had some inconsistencies? Absolutely. But you can see the turnovers way down. 3 interceptions on the year. Like, I still would, and he got 3 touchdowns last week, which we like to see. But boy, if you could sort of up that touchdown level just a bit, we could be talking about him as a true sort of back end QB1 type. So I'm digging Derek Carr with you, especially the next 2 weeks. Come on now. Falcons, Jets, doesn't get any sweeter than that.
Yeah, and one guy that took advantage of that Falcons matchup, and he's okay. I was all aboard the Jameis Winston train here.
Oh.
And I apologize to everyone out there, because I'm, as my Twitter account would tell you, I am not the biggest Taysom Hill fan. I think we need less Taysom Hill and not more Taysom Hill in
Amen.
New Orleans. But if you look at his schedule, Drew Brees in my opinion, is not coming back before the end of the regular season. So Taysom Hill is the quarterback through the fantasy playoffs. He's got the Broncos, the Falcons, the Eagles, the Chiefs, and the Vikings. Dare I say, and I'm probably going to be disappointed because I'm always disappointed with Taysom Hill, but dare I say that Taysom Hill, because of his rushing ability, might actually be a QB1, a top 12 quarterback the rest of the season?
Oh, I just threw up a little bit in my mouth.
I know, and so did I. I feel bad saying it, but
I know.
Andy, those matchups are really good. He provides you with the ability to run the ball. He had two rushing touchdowns. He had a touchdown pass that was called back due to a holding penalty. I can't believe I'm saying that, but again, it's 2020. Why not? Everything else
why
has gone to hell.
Like, Matt, you know what? I called Taysom Hill the thief of joy when it comes to fantasy football, because he in his previous role, he always vultures one, he throws, he runs one in. It's just a mess, right? But you're right. Now, I like the Atlanta-Philly matchup better than heading into Denver this week, but his legs make all the difference. So you could talk me into that argument. I'm going to be like anti Taysom Hill as long as I can. That's my comfort zone. I just wonder when now teams, and I'm sure they figured out before, you know, he's going to be running a lot, but against a team that could contain him, do we see that real one-dimensional look, and then the turnovers might start popping up? That's my only concern.
Yeah, and he's not a great thrower of the ball, but he did accumulate over 220 passing yards, and I get it. That offense now is, not that it didn't before, but it is certainly going to run through Michael Thomas. And I don't know what Alvin Kamara's situation is. I know he had an ankle injury that kind of held him out, and the game script really didn't matter because the way they played, they didn't really need Alvin Kamara. But I just wonder about what the offense is going to look like. I think we're going to see a lot of Taysom Hill runs. I think we're going to see a lot of a lot of Latavius Murray and Alvin Kamara, and the other receivers are going to take a hit because Michael Thomas is going to take away a lot of that. So I until Taysom Hill shows me something else as an actual quarterback, I'm going to rely on his legs. But in terms of like real football, again, until he shows me something with his arm, I don't, if anybody thinks he's a franchise quarterback, like I think Sean Payton does, I think that's crazy.
I think that's ridiculous. If Sean Payton truly believes, what this guy's a gimmick quarterback. He's a gimmick. It's a gimmick. This dude had more, before that game, he had more receptions than passes in 4 years in the National Football League. Like, you think that guy is going to be your quarterback of the future? Well, I wonder where Sean Payton is, what network he's going to be an analyst on in 2 years then, Matt. That's ridiculous.
That's a very good thing. And he might even have that job lined up, which is why he's saying all these things.
Like Drew Brees.
Imagine, yeah, exactly. Imagine what is going through Jameis Winston's head. This is a guy for whatever Jameis Winston's flaws were last year, yes, he threw 30 interceptions, and that's not good the last time that I checked. He still threw 30 touchdowns. Like, that's good. And if you could clean up the interceptions, I think he got LASIK eye surgery, so he's raring and ready to go. I mean, that has to account for something. So what's going through Jameis Winston's head? Like, I can't even beat this guy. He's not even a real quarterback.
Right. Like, is the Taysom Hill, and I like Sean Payton saying, I want to see what we have in Taysom Hill. You're fighting for a division title. This isn't, you're not 2-8 here trying to be cute and seeing what you got. You're trying to win a division title. Is this more damning on Jameis Winston in practice, the stuff we don't see, than on Taysom Hill? Because I would have to think, if he got any sort of discipline, learned whatever from Peyton and Breeze, wouldn't you rather have that arm chucking it up to Michael Thomas all day? I would. So I wonder if this is more damning on Jameis Winston and how he's looked to Sean Peyton in practice. I don't know.
It's that, or Taysom Hill has pictures of Sean Payton doing something very unlawful or unwarranted or unholy.
Weird.
One of those uns, he's got pictures of him doing it. So we got to hit the break. We're going to wrap up our poll question coming up after this. And the poll question was, which Toronto Maple Leaf has the worst contract? I gave you some options, and we're going to find out who the winner was. It ended up being a lot closer than I thought. I'm Matt Marchese. That's Andy McNamara. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to Sportsnet Tonight on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Matt Marchese. Alongside me, an excellent job tonight, as always, my co-host, Andy McNamara. So, Andy, I had the poll question that went out earlier. It is finished. Which Toronto Maple Leaf has the worst contract? And this was in honor of Emily Kaplan's article that she did for ESPN. She was on Hockey Central earlier today, so if you want to check out that interview, go to sportsnet.ca/590 and check it out. And her pick was John Tavares, and that's no surprise. I think everybody kind of leans in that direction. But this poll was a lot closer than I anticipated. I threw William Nylander in as a joke because so many people hate William Nylander
over the years.
For reasons that are, you know, inexplicable to me. But there are some people that probably thought that his contract was garbage, and 11.7% of people thought that it wasn't a good contract. Now, this is where it got interesting. We already know the story about Other, because I put Other and write in, and 6.1% of people voted for it and didn't write in squad.
Didn't write in.
So that didn't work out. John Tavares ends up winning over Mitch Marner, but John Tavares finishes with 42.9%, and Mitch Marner finishes with 39.4%. That's way closer than I thought.
Yeah. That is way closer, because for most of the night, John Tavares was right out of the gate, had, 20%
almost
lead on everybody?
Yeah, he had almost half the vote. Yeah.
And now for Mitch Marner. Oof.
I wonder how much of that is the recency bias of what we saw in the playoffs. I really, really do, because that's kind of what we go by a lot of the time. And offensively, Mitch Marner's a dynamo. He's a better defender than I think he gets credit for. But what we saw in the playoffs was, I think he even admitted as much. Like the first game, he said he was disinterested or something along those lines. Don't quote me on that, but I think I remember something along those lines. That's not a good look. That's really not a good look.
No. And you hear that, you're like, okay. And I wonder how much of the additions of these new veterans that Kyle Dubas brought in will help curb that type of behavior. If Joe Thornton, if Wayne Simmons sees that or hears that, they're like, "Hey, pal, we're trying to win a championship here. You want in? Then get going. Come on, no days off. Let's go."
Yeah, I 100% agree. Well, no days off for us here at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. That's it for us tonight, though. Andy and I will be back. You're back on tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, with Josh Goldberg.
That's right, and then we're together Thursday.
We are together Thursday, so we'll have another. We'll probably have another hot take Thursday, and we will definitely have some Win Andy's Pizza on Thursday. So looking forward to that. But for myself, Andy McNamara, behind the glass, Tom Young, producer Mark Boffo, that's it for us here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Tonight. We'll chat with you on Thursday. CBS Radio is up next.